about. So easy.
You gotta put it in perspective.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
Que ven bien, me llamo el Tototito que ven en bien. Quiere decirles que el ojo que tengo bien hecho me da que ver bien. Mira, Tijuana, componerlo que ven en bien. Quiere agarrarme también una puta que ven en bien en Tijuana para poder. Hola, papá, que ven en bien.
What the hell?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know.
Oh, say does that banner rock and red flare for the land of the free. And the home of the brave.
Play ball.
This is horrible. I want to go out and puke right now.
Get boarded!
There's no turning back, no matter how much we wish we could.
And now.
All right, now the moment you've all been waiting for. Lights! Music!
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Thursday, the 14th of November.
Yes.
Already halfway through the month. It can't just be me where it feels like the months are much, much longer early in the year. January, February, March. When you get into November, it's a blur.
November? Try August.
Yeah, well, true.
August is a slide into Christmas.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it's Christmas and you're already back into January.
I know. It's tragic.
I'd like to start this with a dumb criminal story today. There was a 31-year-old named Hirotaka Kikuchi.
Okay.
And he was arrested on charges of voyeurism. And what he did was he implanted some little cameras in a wristwatch and then taped two of the wristwatches to the steps, to the stairs, so that they would be shooting straight up upskirt videos.
Okay.
And basically everybody that walked by, he would, you know, he would record. But the problem is a male teacher at a nearby high school happened to see the watches while using the stairs himself. And he was like, that's weird.
They're kind of obvious.
Two watches on steps. Yeah. Somebody must have left them or, you know, take them back to, you know, someplace else to get them picked up. So he checked them out, and upon viewing the video that was on them, the guy who set him up had begun recording while he was still there.
Oh.
So basically he videotaped himself. You could see his face as clear as daylight. So he's like, all right, let me see if I've got these set. And right at the whole time, it was videotaping
him.
So they called the police and they said, yeah, your perp is right there.
Yeah, that's great.
He's on the video right there.
How bad do you need to see somebody's skirt? You know, they wear things under those skirts.
Some. I don't.
Most.
I agree. Not my thing. But and I'm also not a fan of looking at girls when they're not aware that they're being
right,
looked at.
Right.
That's BS.
There's internet porn.
There's a lot of it.
I don't get that.
But this guy was trying to get his own.
Right.
And videotaped himself first so that everybody could see who it was.
Well, that's a tricky business. Then.
It is. It really is. All right. Bean, you there?
Nope.
Fantastic.
All right. Everything's going well.
On today's Kevin and Bean Show, we have an author of a fascinating book. Steve Faneru is the guy's name, and the book's name is League of Denial. And this is about the NFL and the concussions.
I heard about this book. I don't give a fig about sports. This sounds fascinating.
It is craziness.
Yeah.
The amount of time that lapsed between when they first started getting worried about concussions in the NFL and how long the NFL tried to deny it. Mm-hmm. And by the time they got around to settling, I think it was $750 million, $760 million, something like that, without saying that they did anything wrong.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's super fascinating. There are a lot of players died, and then their family would have to give their okay for their brains to be used so they could be studied and find out exactly what happened. And, it turns out that when you get hit in the head repeatedly, that's not good.
It does things. Yeah.
It's shocking that the NFL could somehow get away with this. It's shocking, but it's it brings in so much money, the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So they would bring in their own experts that were on the payroll, and then the experts would go, nope, everything's all good. Let's get back out
there.
Let's
play ball.
Let's play ball. So we got him on today. We're going to talk about that topic. We have Steve Lillywhite returning to the studio.
He's a fascinating guy.
He could talk for days and days, and everything he says is interesting. It's rare.
Yeah, you don't even have to ask a question, but it's still really interesting.
He's a music producer who has produced, I don't know, probably all of the songs that we play on K-Rock.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk along with a lot of other genres and artists. So we're going to talk to him today. We have tickets for The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Awesome.
This event where you get to meet the cast. That's coming up this morning. We have Sean Tube. I don't know if you recognize his name, but he is one of the stars of Homeland. He plays Majib Jahavadi. Yes, he's the guy, the Iranian official that
Carrie's meeting.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Spoiler alert, if anyone hasn't seen that yet.
And that's like three episodes ago.
I agree, but we get screamed at every single time. And that's such a great show, and it's going to be exciting to talk to him and find out just exactly what's going on with that. So we'll do that. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat. Hi. Listening to the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ at 5:50.
Got a great 911 as a joke for you guys coming up right after the top of the hour.
Sweet.
We always say, how do these 911 operators not either blow their own brains out or drive to the homes of the people that call them and kill them all? I just don't know where they get that kind of patience.
I saw one time this girl called and she was getting kidnapped, and then the 911 operator left and went and did some actual detective work out in the field.
Hunted her down, sure, and saved her.
Hunted her,
right?
Down and, sure, saved her. That was, yeah, crazy.
911's not a joke there, is it?
That's right.
Nope. That could happen. Absolutely. Hey, it's Thursday morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show, 5:51. Time for our first look at the Showbiz Beat with Ralph Garman.
Well, it's happened.
What's happened?
College student that was hacking the computers of Miss Teen USA and other celebrity women and photographing them through their own webcams.
Ooh.
Oh!
Has pled guilty. He could serve up to 11 years in prison before starting his job with the NSA. So,
a lucrative job, too, I'm sure.
Following that. That's scary that someone can hack into your computer and then take pictures of you from your own camera in your computer in the privacy of your own home.
And I imagine they figured out a way to not have that little light go on so that you didn't know, but wow, that is freaky.
It's end times. That's how we're all going to go, via
just
computer.
Just like that?
Yeah.
Everyone's worried about the bomb or some virus or something? No. Computers are going to take us out. Did you hear about Facebook?
Yeah, it's a place on the internet where you go.
No,
and you
not
can
that. What
put
they're
updates.
Doing?
I did not know.
Yes, here's what they're going to be doing. You know, when you're sitting at your computer and you just float your cursor around and you float on certain topics or ads or you're going to click on that thing that says, "Ooh, cheat on your wife. Go here to this ad and stuff." And you say, "Oh, no, I'm not going to click on that because what if it shows up on my computer?"
Right.
Facebook is adding something called hover intent tracking.
Hover intent.
Which means just by where you sit your cursor.
What if it's...
The information for that site is going to be transmitted back to Facebook, and they're going to know that you had some interest in whatever that was you were just... You didn't even click on it. You were just hovering over it.
What if you're not even paying attention to where your cursor is? You're just reading something else.
Yes.
Wow.
Facebook will have that information about you.
Wow. I got to change a lot of stuff I do.
That's what I'm saying. Jeez, if you knew what I lingered on and debated whether to click on or not, you would see why I'm so panicked. All right, let's talk about some more showbiz news. Courtney Stodden, no surprise, the bleach blonde teenager that was married to Doug Hutchison.
16 years, 51 years old.
16 when they got married, he was 50. She's now, I guess, what, 18, 19 years old? Here's a shock. She's decided to write a tell-all book about the secrets of their marriage.
Oh.
Wow.
I'll tell you something, this broad is the worst thing that ever happened to this dude.
Yeah.
He looked at her at 16 and she was all boobs and blonde hair. And he's like, I'm going to get me some of that.
He thought.
He's going to pay every day of his life for that decision.
Yeah.
He thought in his mind, I've hit the mother load.
Yes. The mom's going to sign up. Wrong. And I'm going to marry a hot 16 year old. And now she's just a hideous blow pig who's going to write a book about him.
Good times.
She's going to dish the dirt about their sex life. And, of course, what she's always wanted, she's also in talks to star in her own reality show.
Sure.
So she's got that going
for her.
By the
way, as attractive as she was as a teenager, She was still too stupid to put up with.
But look, a lot of men put up with a lot of stupid.
I guess.
Yeah.
For a little pretty. Some guys don't put a premium on intelligence when it comes to a woman.
But don't you have to talk to her at some point during the day as well?
Look, I don't think Doug Hutchison is a Mensa member himself, by the way. Right. So I don't think there's any danger of there being a big discrepancy between their levels of intelligence.
He's not trying to solve the whole health care crisis?
No, I don't believe he is, but boy, he's just paying the price now. Well, we're talking about reality shows, and we were. Courtney Stodden is going to get her own. The Real World on MTV is upping the ante. How many seasons do you think The Real World's been on television?
That was one of the first. So I'd say
18.
Pretty good guess, Lisa. Yeah. Pretty good guess, Kevin.
Yeah.
If you said 28 seasons, you'd
what?
Be correct.
28.
There've been 28 seasons of The Real World. The upcoming 29th season, MTV has announced they're changing things up a little bit. They're going to have roommates move into a house, as they always do, but they're also going to have the exes of those roommates also move into the house.
So it's sort of the opposite of Survivor in that they have husband and wives or couples or whatever. But this is going to be your ex?
Your ex.
Oh.
You'll be forced to coexist with them as well as a bunch of strangers in the house. And then, of course, watch your ex hook up with the new strangers and that
sure.
kind of stuff. So, you know, just give them weapons. Just
really?
Go. We know what you're shooting for, MTV. Just give them weapons. And a only one man can leave policy. And let's just cut to the chase. Because we know where
that's a going. Terrible idea.
That's a terrible idea.
Movie news, Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, of course, was a huge hit in 2011. Paramount has just announced the latest Mission Impossible movie starring Tom Cruise will be out on Christmas Day of 2015.
Oh,
circle
I'm busy.
Your calendar. And while we're talking about Mr. Cruise, did you hear what he said about what it's like to make a movie?
Yeah.
Tom compared the hardships of working on a film set to those of working in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Like serving in the armed forces in Afghanistan. He drew a comparison between those two.
We talked a bit about this while you were out earlier this week, and I think his intent, which was, hey, I can't get back to see my kids as often as I'd like to.
Mm-hmm. Very different.
I know, but is the same as someone in the military or whatever. I mean, it sounded like it wasn't
It sounded
quite
like
as,
it was out of context.
Not quite as bad as,
yeah.
as that, but who knows.
As we wanted
Tom,
to believe.
Who knows with Tom Cruise.
However, even if you're on a movie set and you're away from your kids, you can. If you get a free weekend, you can hop on your private
sure.
jet and go see your kids.
There's that.
Not a lot of servicemen having that option, I would believe.
Correct.
You know who's not happy with that comment is Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. He made quite a stink at the AFI Fest in Los Angeles this week. Asking regarding that statement, how effing dare you?
It's on.
He said, even when you're on a set, you know what you do? You go to your hotel room at the end of the day, and you order effing chicken or steak.
But that happens in the military too,
That's
right?
That's true. They do go back to their suite and okay. Order room service. So, got that too. Yeah, Wahlberg apparently not happy with any actor who ever complains about his situation. He's always been like that. He always thinks acting's a pretty sweet gig, and no one really has any room to talk about it, so we'll have to wait and see. Britney Spears is apparently working her ass off for her upcoming stint in Las Vegas. Sources close to Britney say she's learning some very challenging choreography for the shows, wants to move things to the next level and make a really impressive show with her dancing around stage because, as you know, she can't sing.
Right. Huh?
Got that going for her. And this won't come as a shock to you, but apparently there is going to be a new 90-minute TV special about her prepping for her Vegas show.
All right.
Called I Am Britney Jean. It'll be on E! And they are going to film a 90-minute show showing her prepare for the concert residency. Special airs on December the 22nd. Her opening night is December the 27th of this year. I forgot it was happening that quickly.
Wow, that is quickly.
It'll be this Christmas. Her new album, of course, Britney Jean, will be out on December the 3rd, so it all comes in together into one big promotional package.
There must not have been a lot of interest in that special if it ended up on E, by the way.
I bet they were the ones who paid top dollar for the rights to do it. Hmm. They spent a lot of money over there on E. Today's celebrity birthdays, Reverend Run of Run DMC is 49 years old today. Actor Patrick Warburton. plays Joe, of course, on Family Guy, and for a long time he was on...
he's so great as Joe.
Seven Brides and a Brother. What's that?
Rules of Engagement.
Rules of Engagement. Josh Duhamel is 41 years old today. Travis Barker of Blink, 182. He is 38 years old today. Actress Olga Kurylenko.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Magic City and Quantum of Solace. Reportedly, she has also been auditioning for the role of Wonder Woman in the upcoming Batman vs. Superman.
Let's do it. I'm in.
She is 34 years old today. And our very own, the captain of our very own Edmund Fitzgerald, Bean Baxter, celebrates his birthday today.
Birthday.
Why am I the only one still clapping?
You're the only clap from the beginning.
Birthday.
Bean is our captain, and like the Edmund Fitzgerald, we are about to break in half and sink to the bottom of the lake here on the Kevin at Bean Show.
That's so about right.
We may not be back. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show business.
What up, 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 6.07.
Love that band so much. So fun. They played the Weenie Roast this
year.
They did. They're so good, and I'm so happy that they're on night number two of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas Show. That's going to be on Sunday, December 8th. That's the night with Arcade Fire in Phoenix and The Neighborhood and Cap Cities, Lord, Portugal the Man, Atlas Genius, and Bastille. Tickets for that show are going on sale tomorrow at noon. Please be a K-Rock Street Team member and buy those tickets. It's going to sell out just like night number one did last Friday. And those shows will be here before you know it, guys. Like in, 3 weeks? Something
yeah.
Like that?
Very it's simple to sign up to. You just go to K-Rock. It takes a couple of minutes. They'll give you the password and then, you know, depending on what you want, if you want us to spam you all year long, go ahead and stay a member. And if you don't want that, then you can go ahead and unclick. Unfriend us.
As I mentioned a few moments ago, I can't imagine how terrible a job being a 911 operator is. Because if the call is an actual emergency, you're in the pressure seat. You've got to figure out the right things to say and do to save a life, usually, okay?
Yeah.
But 99% of the time, people are calling asking why they ordered Chinese food and it's not here yet. It's been 45 minutes. I mean, most of the time, people are abusing the privilege of 911.
I wonder what the actual percentage is. We'll have to figure this out at some point, have a 911 operator back
in. Absolutely.
I wonder if the percentages are as high as it seems like. I would guess 8 out of 10 are nonsense.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I'm always impressed whenever a 911 call is released with how professional the person on the other end of the phone is. And that's why from time to time we like to spotlight their great efforts with a feature we call 911 is a joke.
To get up, get down. 911 is joking, yo, down.
We go to Waukesha, Wisconsin. A man called in at 4:30 in the morning to 911 because he wanted to have a woman removed from his apartment.
She won't leave.
Haven't we all been there? Am I right,
pay
gentlemen?
Pay her and she'll leave.
That's right. Pay her.
Well, some of the details were a little bit sketchy. Rather than tell you the story, we'll let the 911 call pick it up for you.
Waukesha, please. This is Drake. Let me help you.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if you could send an officer over to my place to have somebody physically removed.
And by the way, this might be an outstanding time to mention how many 911 calls that we've played on this show are from people who are drunk.
Yeah, that's 100%.
Yeah, this guy included.
Who do you want removed?
Just a girl.
Okay, who's just the girl? Who's the girl you want removed?
She's sleeping in my bed. And
okay, who is she?
I don't know, ma'am.
her name is...
She's in your bed right now?
Yeah, and I'm sitting on the couch in the living room talking to you.
Okay, how did she get there?
Did she
come home with you, or...?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
what? She
just...
All right, you're going to find that our friend, whose name ends up being Ben Duddles, by the way, you're going to find that he does not have, how shall I say this, all the details at his fingertips.
I love it so much. Like, what's her name? I don't know. I'm thinking Tina, some kind of T word. I can't tell. How did she get in your house? I don't really know.
Yeah, about that. What was that? Let's see if he comes up with any facts.
Fell asleep or something.
Well, how did she get into your apartment?
He's thinking.
How did she get into your apartment and into your bed?
while we were talking. And
okay, did you bring her home with you?
Well, I assume so.
What? How does the 911 operator not laugh?
Do we know who she is?
Her name is...
That's my favorite part.
I want to say Wendy. Sylvia?
No, it's...
Did you just meet her tonight, or is she a friend, or...
She's a neighbor.
She's a neighbor?
Okay, all right, we got
okay,
some,
we
got
do we
something.
Know what her name is?
What the heck is her name?
I love it.
I don't know.
Okay, what is your name, sir?
Huh?
What is your name?
I would prefer not to say.
All right, that's another, again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You see that all the time with 911 calls. Look, they know who you are and they know where you live, sir. You're not fooling anybody.
I'm not sure he knew, by the way. I'm not sure he knew his own name. I'm thinking Tom or Tim. I don't know.
How did this woman get into his bed, you guys?
Why wouldn't he just say, I brought her home? I mean, clearly that's...
Unless he just doesn't remember. It's 4:30 now.
He still sounds drunk.
They could have done their thing at 11 p.m. And that could all be ancient history for him by now.
I know, but the only other option besides you brought her home is she followed you and broke in. Now, do you think that happened?
Probably. And fell asleep unlikely. In your bed.
Right. By the way, you guys have any theories yet on why he wants her out of his bed?
Any theories on why he wants her? Well,
if she's sleeping.
What
she's
time did you say? 4:30?
4:30 a.m., yeah.
He has to go to work and he doesn't want to leave her in his apartment.
Oh, that's a great guess. All right, let's find out.
Okay, have you both been drinking tonight?
What do you think, ma'am?
Well, I have. Okay. But I don't know about her. She's just snoring away like a train.
Ah, there it is. She's snoring
she's
too much.
Snoring?
She's snoring.
Okay.
What? Wait.
So you don't know how she got in there, though.
Say it again.
You don't know how she got into the apartment.
Well, I'm just saying that we were hanging out and stuff like that, and then
she just decided to go to bed.
Well, pretty much.
Okay.
And then...
All right, we're about to hear her start snoring.
And then it's like I'm trying to wake her up, and she won't wake up.
And she's snoring like a train?
Snoring like a train.
Okay. Is that her?
Holy.
Is that her snoring that I'm hearing?
Yeah, she's snoring like a train.
Really? I hadn't said that.
Okay, we'll send someone over there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
She sounds like one of my bulldogs, by the way.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of scary movies. That's always the sound of Satan.
Yeah. So the they said they actually waste the time of the Waukesha, Wisconsin, I think it is, police department comes out there to do what? I don't know. To wake this woman up?
To wake the woman up and have her leave.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable. That, ladies and gentlemen, is why 911 is a joke. To get up, get down. 911 is
joking, yo. Oh, no. Sorry. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 24 minutes after 6.
Everyone from U2 to Morrissey to 30 Seconds to Mars to The Killers, the producer of all time here on the Kevin and Bean Show, Steve Lillywhite. I think he's won 5 Grammys, by the way, for his producing work. He's going to be joining us for a return appearance here on the Kevin and Bean Show in the 7 o'clock hour. So if you're a music fan, especially a longtime K-Rock listener, you want to hear Steve's stories. He is awesome.
Let's talk about Gene Simmons. He tweeted that he had been offered the role of the Green Goblin.
Yeah, that was interesting.
In Spider-Man, turn off the lights. Whatever that's called.
Get out of the dark.
Stay out of the dark. Right, that's it. Stay out of the dark.
Turn off the dark. Spider-Man, right. Turn off the dark.
Right.
And it was a little bit of a surprise to many people because Gene Simmons, he's the bass player and one of the lead singers for the band Kiss, of course, is not exactly known for his acting ability. So it seemed like a surprise to us that he would be going right to Broadway.
We also didn't see it anywhere else except for his Twitter feed, I don't think.
Right. So we kind of want to confirm whether it's all true or if it's just Gene Simmons being Gene Simmons. But I believe we have our man on the phone right now. Hi, Mr. Simmons. How are you, sir? English only, please, Mr. Simmons, if you would. It's Kevin and Bean. How you doing?
I was actually just getting the house ready. You know, it's that time of year, getting the house ready for all the holidays, the Jewish holidays, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Hanukkah's coming up, and I'm... Right now, actually, putting up the menorah. Yeah. Lisa May, speaking of menorah, I'd like to check out your labia menorah.
Okay. Oh, my God.
You know, wow. That is,
You came on pretty strong there, pretty quick.
Yeah, where's the sweet talk?
It's a religious holiday. Look, buy a girl a glass of drink of wine. Or something.
That one was strong. Give it to me. Come on. That tie-in.
It was kind of strong. I'll give you
so,
that.
So, Gene, you were on hold. You heard us talking about this story that apparently only came from you. I've not seen it confirmed anywhere else, but you tweeted a few days ago that you have, in fact, been offered the role of the Green Goblin on Broadway in the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. True or false?
No, it's very true. It's very true. I mean, I do have some experience. It's limited, but I do have some experience on stage performing in plays, and I have been offered this role, and I'd be surprised if I don't take it, because it's a great role, and frankly, even though I'd be portraying his enemy, I relate quite closely to Spider-Man, because I, too, shoot a sticky web.
Oh, Lisa May. No, it's okay. Got it.
She got
you don't
it.
Need to... Yeah. No.
You understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, she's good at filling in the punchlines.
Yes.
Well, you know, speaking of Lisa May, I've actually been asked to portray the role of the Green Goblin.
Right.
But he needs his female counterpart, and that's the Jean Gobbler. Would you be interested in being the Jean Gobbler?
All right.
I'd like to see that.
All right, a little better.
Just gobble it right up like that.
Well, I think we understand what you mean. I don't think there needs to be any more explanation
sound on that effects. One. Please, no sound effects.
Part of being, of course, you know, any type of character on stage when you're portraying, whether it be the Phantom of the Opera or whether it be the Green Goblin, doesn't really matter. It's wearing a mask, and, you know, I obviously have a lot of experience wearing a mask, you know, mm-hmm. being in Kiss and putting on all the different types of makeups and accoutrements to
right.
take on a character, and I'd like to first put on a mask on you, Lisa May. It's a sticky
okay.
mask. It's a salty
Jeez,
mask.
Seriously, we can't just have a conversation. You can't just talk as people here. What's happening?
Good lipid profile.
You can't romance the girl for 1 second? Would that kill you?
What is wrong with you? What do you mean romance a woman? I'm talking sweet, Lisa May.
This is your version of sweet?
I'm just a little bit, I'm sorry, you know, to be honest, you know, I have to show a little bit of vulnerability here. This is not something I often do, but...
Oh, okay.
Because I'm Gene Simmons of Kiss, and it's the greatest band in the world. By the way, you guys owe me $78 for this conversation.
Okay.
KissArmy.com. I'm a little bit nervous about kind of getting behind the curtain again. It's been a long time since I was on stage.
Well, I mean, Broadway, that's a tough challenge even for the most experienced stage actor. And you're, as you mentioned, you're a newbie.
Yeah,
it is a bit intimidating, but... Speaking of being behind curtains,
I knew it!
You know, Kevin, God damn it doesn't really work if you just step all over the joke. You know,
I don't actually get it. What? Speaking of what happens?
Lisa May, I would like to get behind your beef curtains. Is what
okay.
I'm saying.
Oh, all right.
Really? Wow. Wow.
So don't ever
that.
Ask for explanation, Lisa.
I
Come on,
understand.
What's wrong with you?
Stupid Lisa.
All right, Homeland fans. Spoiler alert. I guess we should say that first, right?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Now, if you're not caught up, if you're one of those people who waits till the end of the season so you can binge watch on DVD or Netflix, we don't want to ruin anything for you. But, Kevin, I don't know that I want to talk to our next guest after the damage he did to our country. I mean, you don't just blow up the CIA and then come on the Kevin DeBean show and then shoot the breeze about the Dodgers,
but
right?
We've got him right where we want him, though, Bean.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
He is actor Sean Tube, and he has been terrifying this season on Showtime's Homeland playing Majid Javadi. Sean, welcome to the Kevin DeBean show, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. It's really simple. Just don't upset me.
Don't upset you. Okay.
All right. Believe me, you already have terrified us.
And you'll be fine.
We like everything you do, sir.
So,
and
Sean.
You got so scary. I want to be on for 45 minutes with you guys.
I'm always fascinated when a role like this comes along for an actor, because you're a guy who's been in show business for a long time. You've been on 100 different episodes of TV shows. You've been in 20 movies or something like that. But it seems like this is the kind of role that comes through, and all of a sudden people know your name because it's such a high-profile role on a high-profile show. Has it been that experience for you so far?
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, Homeland is a monster. I mean, I had no idea, to be honest with you. You know, when you do, you know, I've done films, that, you know, such as Crash and won the Oscar and The Kite Runner and Iron Man. I've been blessed with such amazing stuff. And then here comes Homeland, and you go, okay, it's a TV show. It's doing great and this and that. And then all of a sudden, it's a whole different ballgame. It's the fans are so dedicated. And I tell you, my phenomenal agent, Marnie Rosenzweig, who is actually a huge fan of you guys, is a fan of the show, and she really talked me into it, and she really suggested that I see the first season right away, And the first night that we sat down with my wife to watch one episode at 10 o'clock, 6 hours later,
yep.
We had watched six episodes and we couldn't turn it off. It's that kind of a thing. So it's an honor to be part of that.
It is funny because you get through the end of that one and you go, well, you know, one more. That's not going to be a problem, one more. And then you get to the end of that one and you go, well, one more.
Yeah, it's addicting. You say, come on, give me one more. And that's why some people just wait and just watch all of it together.
Let me ask you. I'm sorry.
Well, Majid Javadi is amazing.
Let me ask you maybe a dumb question. I'm trying to form it the best I can. A lot of people pay attention to a TV show if they're in love with it. Let's say you watch Homeland every week. You know exactly what's going on. You know the characters. There's more people that sort of pay attention to pop culture and sort of have seen you around. And when you play roles like this where you're in Iranian intelligence and you're considered the enemy and a possible terrorist, do you get the double look on the street from people who don't know where they know you from and perhaps are trying to figure out, you know, who you are, where they've seen you, and they look at you with that stink eye?
Well, that's a dumb question.
All right. I accept that.
No, but seriously. No, it's my career has always been like that, you know. The characters I've played, I never look like me. I'm either 20 years older or younger I enjoy that. And it's funny, especially going through airports, the TSA people always just stare at me like,
right.
You come through here a lot, you know, and because one thing that doesn't change is your eyes and your eyebrows, and people recognize that. So from every character, you know, they kind of stare at you and they're not sure. But with this guy, with Javadi, he's leaving an impression. So I'm sure
I already had that experience yesterday. The guy looked at me and goes,
oh my God.
when you're shopping.
This is the voice of actor Sean Toob here on the Kevin Bean Show. He is on Homeland. He is Majid Javadi on that program Sunday nights on Showtime. I have to ask you what it's like to go one-on-one on last week's show with that intense, long scene with you and the great Mandy Patinkin. As an actor, is that just a dream day at the office for you, Sean?
Absolutely. You know, anytime you go up against people who have, you know, who are great at what they do, I mean, I get excited about it. Other people might get nervous about it, but I truly I was looking forward to it. The entire week, before that I knew that's going to happen, I was so excited about it. I mean, playing against Claire, Claire does an amazing job on the show. Mandy is incredible. But yeah, it's very exciting to spar against the best, and it was wonderful. I loved it. I hope to do more of it, and it's truly exciting for an actor.
I'll tell you what's amazing about like that particular scene when you were across from Mandy Patinkin is, as an actor, you know, I don't know how you do this because you know where that scene is going to end up, but you really are full of confidence for most of that conversation. Until that confidence is crushed by what he's saying, how do you not telegraph, you know, that you're going to end up bending over for him? You know what I mean? How do you not telegraph that?
You know, the thing is about the acting, which when people ask, I always say, you know, you can't act it. You got to be it. You know, it's just you got to really be the person in that moment in what's going on. You know, remember Crash, for example, when I shot the little girl?
Right.
At that moment, if you look at that face of the character, he really was horrified. I mean, I had to believe that I just did that.
Right.
You have to really understand, and you can't act it. You have to really be the person, be the character, be that at that moment. You can't anticipate what you're going to do next.
You have to listen to
what the actor is saying and react to that. Because Mandy is also the way he works. It's never the same way. He might change it up on you.
What do you mean it's never the same way? You mean he changed the dialogue or what?
No, he changes the way that he delivers the line. Ah. He changes the way his attitude is sometimes. And from one take to another. So you got to be really open to it. You got to leave yourself open and listen to what he's saying. Listen to Saul, not you know?
Right, right.
And react to that. So it's fun. It's awesome. The writers are incredible, and the directors are incredible. So
absolutely. So, before we let you go, Mr. Tube, I have to ask, since we saw you at the end of last episode, again, spoiler alert, we saw you, you know, basically being escorted out of the country. Are you back on Homeland this year? Will we see more of Giovanni?
Yes, you will. Yeah, you just actually, we just got back from Morocco shooting the last the final two episodes, 11 and 12. And I'm telling you, this season is going to end up with a bang. I mean, people are going to sit in those seats and go, oh my God, it's going to be incredible. And, you know, follow me on Twitter. I give Twitter feeds of what's going on and this and that and updates. So there's a lot more to come. This season is just starting to really rev up.
Well, we cannot, we absolutely cannot wait. Sean, you have been tremendous on this season of Homeland, and we're very excited for this Sunday night at 9 o'clock on Showtime. And thank you for joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show today. We enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Lisa. It's world famous K-Rock at 6:53.
And about this time every hour, Ralph Garman steps in, takes a look at the showbiz beat. What's going on, dude?
It's Bean's birthday! Woo! That's what it's all about today.
What is that? What
was that hideous?
Why is he upset?
Flow sound. I have no idea.
He hates to celebrate his birthday.
Move on.
Wow. Okay.
Let me ask you a
it's
question.
It's not Bean's birthday.
Thank you, Lisa. I love you.
What a dick. Let me ask you a question, though. Bean is a very thoughtful gift giver.
I know.
So he's very thoughtful and he gives gifts to everybody else for their birthday.
Right.
But then, like, he gets mad at people for mentioning his.
You want the gifts, though, right, Bean?
No, I don't want any gifts. Hey, Ralph.
Good.
Speaking of birthdays, I sent yours last week. Did you get part one of your gifts?
I did get a gift. I haven't opened it yet because my birthday is not till this weekend.
So okay.
I like to open my gifts on my birthday.
Make sure it got there.
It did get here. Thank you for in
advance. I just, I don't want to get into it.
Oh my gosh.
But thank you. Thank you, Ralph. Let's move on.
Bean hates birthdays.
Why is it bad if someone tries to be nice to you? Once a year, I try to be nice to you and wish you a happy birthday, and you reject it outright. You slap it down.
I would appreciate you being nice to me.
Take my good intentions, and you flush them in the toilet.
Be nice to me every day.
No.
Or any day.
That's not possible.
Nope.
It's not humanly possible.
Take your day and enjoy it.
Take it.
This is the only one I'm getting, so yes. I better like it.
We can only muster up one day of kindness.
Speaking of birthdays, yesterday was Jimmy Kimmel's birthday.
Yes.
A lot of K-Rock birthdays around this time
Chinese
of year.
Celebrate?
See what you did there? No. I don't think so. But he did mention it on his late night talk show last night. And the band The Killers appeared on his show for the second night in a row. And it was very nice of The Killers, I thought, to put their significant songwriting prowess to work and write an original song for Jimmy's birthday. So here's a little clip from the song The Killers performed live last night on Jimmy Kimmel Live. It's called Old Man Jimmy is Going to Die Soon.
Oh, birthday, Jimmy, it's your birthday. Your number of tired jokes, a few. We're going to dig a grave to hold you. How will you die? Will you buy an old man in your bed? Will the people cry to learn you're dead? Will your heart explode in your chest? Will you mourn the sins left unconfessed? Will it be a car crash, twisted metal wreck? Will you fall down the stairs and break your neck? Or
very nice.
Choke on a bone? Drown in the mud? Jimmy, how will it end? Old man Jimmy is soon to die.
That's old man Jimmy
awesome.
Is soon to die.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Even in a joke parody song, The Killers are just awesome.
Yeah, they're so always good.
Yep. What a great band.
Always good.
Yeah.
Hey, our next guest, Steve Lillywhite, who joins us right after the top of the hour, he is producing this year's Killers Christmas single, which, you know, they have a new Christmas song that comes out every year on December 1st, so maybe he'll tell us about that, too.
That'd be way cool. Kevin, of course, you were an English major. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to say that.
How dare you,
laughing. You were an English major in college.
I was.
So I'm sure you're very familiar with Beowulf.
Oh, absolutely. My favorite.
Do us a little favor since you were an English
major. I'd
rather
you tell the story because you're the showbiz guy.
If you could just, well, it's not really showbiz, it's English literature. I was hoping perhaps you could give us just a quick overview of the story of Beowulf, one of the legendary, it's often considered the first sort of epic drama in literature.
All right. He was a guy that lived on the bay, and he was he was raised by wolves.
No, nope, not Beowulf. Not spelt that way.
Wrong story?
He turned into a wolf at night, though.
Nope, not a werewolf either, no? Lisa. Beowulf, of course, was a Scandinavian hero who helps out a Danish king.
That's what I said.
By attacking a monster that is plaguing his land, named, of course, Kevin.
The wolf.
The monster's name?
The wolf.
No, Beowulf was the hero.
Oh.
The monster. Who was the monster Beowulf slayed?
Bigfoot. Farrah
Abramson?
Not Farrah Abramson, not Bigfoot. Kevin, come on now. English major, Beowulf.
Beowulf.
What was the name of the monster the Beowulf battles?
I got nothing.
Grendel. Grendel was his
Grendel.
Name.
Grendel.
And
still got nothing.
Sci-Fi Network is doing a series based on the epic poem, considered, of course, to be one of the most important works in Anglo-Saxon.
Was this in the news?
So you'll get to see Beowulf.
For the first time, apparently.
Kevin will be introduced to Beowulf.
I only have short-term memory. You guys know that.
Yeah. No word on whether it'll be a modern adaptation or something more like Game of Thrones. I'm guessing more like Game of Thrones, because that's a very hip trend right now to do sort of fantasy swords and dragons and that kind of stuff. So,
and great news, or who'd you say it was? This CW, is that you said?
No, Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi. Great news for Sci-Fi is public domain.
That's true. They don't have to pay anybody the rights.
Yeah.
It's been around for a couple thousand years, that poem. So, good times. Kay Moss, photo shoot with Playboy magazine. First photos have been released.
No,
yeah,
really?
That's how I feel.
What?
Yeah, Kate Moss.
She's a skeleton.
She's doing her Playboy photo shoot.
No.
Photo released this week as her in the classic bunny look. Black bustier, bunny ears, tail, white collar, French cuffs, the whole nine yards. She looked pretty good in the clothes. I'm just afraid to see her naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She should wear clothes.
You have to wait to the January issue to see the final pictures. But
I know that she's one of the most successful models of all time and has had a career that's lasted, it's got to be close to 20 years now, right?
Indeed.
Now?
Yeah. She's but 40 I feel like, years old. She's been working at it since she was a teenager, actually more than 20 years.
I feel like if we, you know, saw her on the street, we would think she is not even pretty enough to be a model.
No, I've often said I would think she's a meth head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That's a shocker to be.
Crackhead chic before it was chic.
Yeah.
Sort of a frying pan face and teeth kind of janky. And
I never got her. I never got that.
She's a great clothes hanger. That's the thing.
Well,
she's a walking hanger, and clothes look good on her, so the designers like to dress her. But I'm with you, brother. I just don't see it. But I was in the airport the other day and saw Kate Upton on the cover of Golf Digest. And
right.
Said, now we're talking.
That's all good. She could be on every
magazine. My girl. Today's celebrity birthdays, besides our very own Bean Baxter, Olga Kurylenko. From Quantum of Solace, most recently Magic City. Boy, she was great in that show. I miss that show, Magic City. I think I'm going to start a website to try to bring it back.
Good idea. Yeah. Wait a couple years, though.
I think it's just sugar doesn't taste as sweet anymore without Magic City. She's 34 years old today. Travis Barker from Blink-182, he's 38. Josh Duhamel is 41 years old today. Patrick Warburton, who, of course, stars on Rules of Engagement, but you may know him as Joe, the police officer from Quahog, Rhode Island, on The Family Guy, 49 years old today. Patrick's just a nice guy, too.
He is.
I run to him every once in a while over there at the Family Guy studios when we're recording stuff, and he always takes time out to say hi and say hi to you guys and tell Kevin and Bean I said hi. And he's a good man, 49 years old today. Joseph Simmons, probably better known to you as Reverend Run from Run DMC, is 49 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Where do you get that energy? Steve Lillywhite was dancing to that song.
Good morning, boys and girls. How are we today?
Good.
All right. Strap on in, ladies and gentlemen, to the return of our favorite record producer. He is Steve Lillywhite, making his fourth appearance on the Kevin and Bean Show.
We just can't get enough.
How you been, Steve? What's going on, man?
Oh, I've been everywhere. I've been, I went to Korea to do some speaking and Vegas to do the Killers Christmas single, which I heard you mention earlier.
Bean loves Christmas music.
Well, I'm, fa- I'm fascinated that the Killers every year, and I think this is what, maybe year six or seven, they put out a single on World AIDS Day on December 1st with the proceeds going to that great charity. And I guess Brandon loves Christmas music too, which is how the whole thing started.
But Brandon is an old romantic.
Ah. Yes. And every year it's such a, I mean, it's such, I have so much anticipation for what they're going to do because the songs are so different. I mean, they pretty much just let themselves go, like whatever they feel like they're going to do. So what can you tell me about this year's
number?
Well,
it's very different. It's actually, it's a song that Brandon wrote with a guy called Taylor from a band called Doors. Although you'd say,
I know them. Yes.
You'd say, you see, this band have a trouble in England because we say Doors.
Right.
And there actually used to be a band called Doors.
Called Doors, yeah.
All that was the Doors. But you, how do you pronounce it?
Doors.
I think it's Dawes.
Dawes.
Oh.
You see, I say Dawes.
Yeah,
you say
D-A-W-E-S. Yeah, Dawes. D-A-W-E-S. They're a terrific band.
Yeah, they're a terrific band. It's almost like a sort of Eaglesy.
Jackson Browne. Very Jackson Browne.
The Jackson Browne. It's called Christmas in L.A.
And Brownie.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful track.
Christmas in L.A. How about that?
Yes. And it's got some very, very funny lyrics.
And what do you do in that situation? Do you help him write? Do you...
No,
I'm so fascinated by what I do. Because this is the fourth time we've had you in, and I'm not sure.
I
just seem to do whatever's needed, I guess.
Well, that's I think the sign of a good producer. And I like to work with very good people, so I don't have to do much.
Right.
it's a very simple.
But I'm saying, do you sit on the couch and go, yeah, that's good?
No, my name's not. My name's not Rick Rubin.
Okay.
Snap. I've heard you say, Steve, and maybe this answers Kevin's question as well. I've heard you say that the worst case scenario for you is if a band comes to you and says, tell me what to do, or I'll do whatever you want.
I don't like that.
Not at all interested in that, right?
No. My job is to steer the ship. My job isn't to build the ship. And as I always say, the Titanic was a great ship, but look what happened to that.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, I steer it, I decorate it, and I bring it safely to port.
But there needs to be some movement already on the band's part going forward so that you can help steer.
Of course. They build it, you know.
Right.
And but I love my job, and I love working with creative people. I just, before The Killers, I did my first different language album. But with a singer called Juanes, who is...
which is Colombian?
He's Colombian.
Okay.
Colombian, not Colombian.
Hey, don't come into our country and make fun of the way we speak English, all right?
It's Colombian.
No, because it's an O, not a U.
So you work with this for the whole album?
Yeah, I did his whole album.
And do you speak...
I don't speak...
Does he speak...
Colombian?
I don't speak a word of Spanish. But then again, you see, I could produce Sigur Rós, and they don't speak English.
Right.
They don't speak any language. It's all about... the feel of the music. So I absolutely loved it, and I think it's...
Do you have an interpreter there with you, or...?
No, he speaks English.
Oh, he does, okay.
Yeah, he does.
He sings in Spanish.
He sings in Spanish, and it's very beautiful.
What was the attraction? Look, we've asked you this before, Steve. Everybody wants you to produce their record, so you've pretty much got your pick of the litter. How did you choose Juanes? What was appealing to you about this project?
It was something that was out of the norm for me. I have to say, as much as I love... two guitars, bass and drums, and indie rock style. I'm always, you know, I've been making records a long time.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, I need my synapses tickled.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand what
I'm
saying.
Yeah.
Not like that, Kevin. Why are you not a musician?
I am a musician. I'm a bass player.
Okay.
So I'm a jack of all trades. I know about music, but I don't want to be an average musician. I don't want to be an average songwriter. I just want to be a great producer.
And you think that you are an average musician?
Yeah, but I'm not good enough to... I mean, if I practice, maybe I would be. But that doesn't
seem to be important to you.
No. I'm a studio guy. When people say, are you in the music business? I'm not really. Those are businessmen. I'm a studio guy. Like, you know, you're in a studio here all day.
Right.
You know, and so I just...
Well, what you do is important. That's the difference between you and us.
Steve, the last time you were in, and this is the voice of Steve Lillywhite here on the Kevin and Bean Show, the five-time Grammy Award-winning record producer. And we don't have to call you sir. We established that last time. You're not a sir, right?
No, I'm one below a sir. I'm a CBE, one... a commander CBE. Of the British Empire.
Okay.
I want to be a commander of the British Empire.
Does that mean you, like, if you went to London and rang up the Queen, would she have to see you because you're in a like some sort of a special club or anything?
No, but I think one of the things, I think my children can get married in Westminster Abbey.
Is that right?
That is one of the perks.
That's pretty strong.
And there are only a finite amount of these awards, so when I die, I do have to call up the Queen and say, I'm sorry, you can now give mine to someone else.
There's a finite number?
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
There's didn't know that.
Only a few thousand. But that,
what do
you, you know,
what do you have to do to be knighted?
To be knighted, I have to do charity work.
Okay. And that's BS, right?
Well, other than the $200 I gave to the Philippines yesterday, which I would recommend everyone do.
Agreed.
Because that, I have to say, is... Oh, have you seen that?
Yeah, it's just disastrous.
Words are two and a half times as big as Katrina or something. You know, and those people have nothing in the first place.
Yeah.
So to take, absolutely. You know, it's very
a lot
sad.
Of people on the ground there are just saying, we can't help you get back on your feet in any way. Leave.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But Anderson Cooper's there, so it'll be
that
all
does help,
right.
Because he's so dreamy, he'll make the people forget about their troubles.
If I was that way, he would be my man.
By the way,
Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
If you were that lucky. Let me just say this. Steve, you put Steve on pause for 1 second. Kevin, are we allowed to mention the thing that we talked about yesterday that we're talking about doing to raise money for Philippine Typhoon Relief? Are we allowed to talk about that on the radio?
I don't know.
Okay, I guess
why
I
not?
Should have asked that off
why
the air.
Not?
We are working out something, and we'll have all the details for you tomorrow. But you know this K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas show is coming up. Steve, even you've heard about this concert, I'm sure.
Oh, I've always loved it. I think I went there once.
Well, night number two is going on sale tomorrow. That's Arcade Fire, Phoenix, The Neighborhood, Capital Cities, Lord, Portugal the Man, Fits in the Tantrums, Atlas, Genius, and Bastille. That's night number two.
Oh, my God. I don't think there's a better lineup in the history of music.
Well, let me tell you about night number one that's already gone on sale and is already sold out. Kings of Leon, Vampire Weekend, Queens of the Stone Age, AFI, Arctic Monkeys, Cage the Elephant, Group Love, Foles, and New Politics. So those are the
terrible.
Two nights that we're talking about.
That one's terrible.
So, I mean, it's the absolute state of alternative rock music in 2013. Like Steve said, you couldn't put together a better lineup. So tomorrow we're going to tell you how you can win 10 pit tickets. 10 pit tickets and backstage access and introduce bands from the stage. And we're going to give you a chance to bid on that in an auction format to raise money for typhoon relief in the Philippines. How awesome a prize is that?
It's very cool.
I'm entering.
You're
so
I'm
in. I want the big money people or the corporations that might have representatives listening to start thinking about what you would pay for that kind of night of debauchery backstage at K-Rock with all of those bands, because tomorrow we'll unveil the details and we'll tell you how you can win that prize and spend that weekend with us here at K-Rock.
You can't buy cool, but I think it's worth trying.
Exactly.
Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Steve, here's what we want to do. We want to take a quick break with you, sir, so you can get some coffee so you can perk the hell up.
Oh, God.
And then when we come back, and all the times you've been in, we've never done this. I've selected a few great songs from your vast discography, and I thought it might be fun to play a little bit of those songs and talk to you about what it was like to make those records and how you made the sounds that you made on those records. Would you be up for that?
I would be, as long – you haven't told me what these songs are, so let's just make sure I did do those
Are
songs.
You afraid that, A, you didn't do it, or B, you don't remember?
No. Or C, you've done your job badly.
Oh, that's very possible.
You know, and you do a U2 song I never did.
That's most likely.
Like Pride. I never did that
Certainly
one.
Likely. Oh. Certainly likely. All right.
That's
so we'll do more with our friend Steve Lillywhite when we return right after this on the Kevin Amin Show on K-Rock.
I'm Lisa May with K-Rock Traffic.
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Steve just said, isn't the traffic always pretty much the same? The answer, yes. Yes, it is.
And sometimes worse.
Unfortunately, it's terrible.
I flew on that A380. That's a fantastic
aeroplane.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds
it's
amazing.
It's so big that you actually think you're on – you don't see half the aeroplane.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it really
crazy.
Is.
Yeah. It's like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. plane, which looks like it's the size of 20 football fields. How many levels are on that goddamn plane, I want to know. That's the voice of our friend Steve Lillywhite, CBE, here on the Kevin Amin Show, 5-time Grammy Award-winning record producer. He joins us from time to time to talk about the world of rock music.
And the world in general.
the world in general.
Yes.
I said I wanted to pick a few numbers to ask you some questions about, just because I'm so fascinated with the different kinds of songs that you produce and how you get the sounds you do. because part of your job is thinking of things that the band hasn't thought of to add to a track.
Oh, of course.
Also,
yeah.
And also talking them into taking something away that they want to put on the track that's a bad idea, right? You kind of steer them.
Oh, absolutely. As I say, I do steer the ship, and I would love a great ship to steer. You know, there's no question.
Let's hear a little bit of song number one. Go ahead and start that. This is Kings and Queens, which is one of the biggest hits ever from 30 Seconds to Mars, a band that you have very recently produced. Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of that. Now, when you really stop
that really
and
was
to it,
a little bit.
That was tight.
Yeah, it was a little tight.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm listening to yeah. that in my headphones, and I'm hearing five or six different things that I can identify
right.
as instruments. But it's so dense and so packed that I suspect there's a lot of things going on, studio tricks and whatnot, that I don't have any idea how you do it. How do you make a song that big?
Well, in fact, to make it that big, sometimes you have to take away. And a lot of what Jared does, he fills up the music like crazy. So I would really, you know, one thing from my...
Wait, he fills it up with...
With even more okay. guitars. On that record specifically, it was like all guitars.
Okay.
And sometimes, and this is something I did learn from you, from Bono, really, is that when you have three or four hooks playing at the same time...
Right.
You maybe, as the artist, you can hear all three and four, but the listener can't hear them. So if you'd played the beginning of the song, you would have heard a guitar riff that was one of like four buried in there. And I went through them. I said, look, you need to really focus. Have something at the front that is really the hook.
One main hook.
Right. Yeah. And the song started very slowly. And I said, look, we need to start the song with a bang. So when you listen to it, it starts with this amazing drum fill that I took from somewhere else and joined on at the front.
See,
you know,
this is what I'm talking about. This is the magic that yeah. you do in the studio that I think most of us don't yeah. ever spend any time thinking about, it because when the song comes to us, it's already fully formed. But yeah. you've heard that song taken apart into 1,000 pieces.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the only thing I do when I'm doing a record. I'm just obsessed with it. And I'm listening to it all the time in the car. And I'm, you know. And
you don't need to get a break from it. You don't need to listen to other stuff.
No.
You really focus.
Yeah, I'm very, very lucky that I have that. I mean, I don't know if it's ADD or something like that, but I can really focus on one thing for so long. And I look at it a bit like a movie or something. You know, you need to come out with a bang, or you need to, you know, or a painting.
Right.
You know, actually as much a painting, because you have the voice is the thing at the front, and then sometimes you paint it with black and white stark in the background. Sometimes you need big colors there. You know,
does it frustrate you as somebody who puts that much effort into a song like this?
That people give it away for nothing. Yes, it does.
Yeah, that was not going to be my question, but I can understand that. No, but that they do you get the feeling that the listeners don't get 25% of what actually was put into the song?
You know what? It doesn't bother me.
It doesn't.
And then occasionally when I get someone, it's like something like, you know, occasionally the phone will ring during a take, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of producers go, oh, we need to do it again because the phone's ringing. Now, by the end of the day, if you leave that phone ringing in the record, it's
right.
going to be so quiet. And if anyone does hear it, A, they're not going to complain about it. And if they ever say to me, is there a phone ringing on that song? I go, you must have listened to that song so many times. You must love it.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, for me, that is... So I don't care about that.
But let me just say this in my defense. I'm driving down the road listening to a song, a current song. I don't even remember who it is, but it has a cell phone ring in it. And I answer my cell phone every single time I'm listening to that song.
You know what? I was going to put a... back in the days of vinyl, I actually was trying to put a dog whistle on a record.
Okay.
Because I thought, wouldn't it be funny to have, like, track five of the album, the dog would always start jumping
dog
around.
Always loves it. My dog loves it. I don't know why.
Yeah, exactly.
let me ask you one more Kings and Queens question. Is this one of the songs that you did with 30 Seconds to Mars where Jared decided it would be fun to have the fans come in the studio and sing on it?
Yes. This was... well, they didn't. He did all these things around the world where he got the fans to sing along. And it's funny, Jared's decision to put the big crowd on was it's sort of the opposite of what U2 do. U2 tend to underplay all that side of it, and it only happens in the concerts.
And then at the concerts, it is amazing.
Yeah. Like on Pride, for instance. But you listen to the record.
You did a good job on that song.
Sorry, keep going.
That's a private joke. But in the studio, U2 will not do it. They always want to try and keep theirs humble. That's the word in the studio.
They use humble, which means sort of stripped down.
Yeah, I think the thing with Bono is that he doesn't want his records to sound that good, because if they sound good, he might be fooled into thinking they are good.
Wow.
There's a logic to that.
He doesn't want it to sound too good because the records are good though,
because
Steve?
if it's good without sounding good, it's really good.
Oh, I see.
You understand?
You don't want us to be fooled by the production. I got you.
Right, yes. Oh, that's exactly.
Is it also that you don't want it to be a disappointment live?
I couldn't possibly comment on that.
Too close?
The fact that he makes so much more money live. But that's interesting that you say that.
It is awkward. It is sort of strange, though, in that with Kings and Queens, they did add that to the song, which is rare.
No, exactly. It is rare, but more and more people are doing that, having the big crowd.
Now, when he comes to you with that idea, do you love it or do you tolerate it?
I funnily enough, this is the funny thing with Jared's and 30 Seconds to Mars, because it is a band, although Jared is very much the man.
Right.
They have so many female fans that when all the tapes came in from around the world, from all these, I can't remember, he has special words for everything.
Right.
It's like the echelon. Like the French. The echelon, yeah.
Right.
That when these tapes came in, it was mainly females. So when we laid all these vocals into the track, it sounded like kids singing. And we didn't want, we didn't want like the war, we don't need no.
He
wanted it. So we had to get loads of men in the studio just to try and add some beef to the sound.
Make it not sound like it was just kids.
Yeah, because a load of girls together sound like kids.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, we need to take a break. Steve Lillywhite is in the studio with us, and we'll be...
Record producer extraordinaire Steve Lillywhite back in studio with us here on the Kevin Bean Show, making his fourth appearance. Pretty soon he's going to want to get paid if he keeps coming down to Kevin.
Never. I love it. Although I would like to just say I'm getting very close to 23,000 Twitter followers. At Sillywhite is my, as you know, because you did do a nice tweet with me.
At Sillywhite.
At Sillywhite. So if anyone feels like hearing any inane comments that I make,
you know what's weird
feel
about
free to follow me.
What's weird about you and unique is that you come in and this is your fourth time and you're not really promoting anything.
Why is that?
Well,
do you have me?
Honestly, I don't think anyone else like that. Do we, Bean? Do we have anybody else
out?
That just comes in.
Oh, I am so honored. Honestly, I really do enjoy it, and it's
tweet Steve at Sillywhite and ask him to tell you the soccer joke. It'll make your whole day. Who do you hear on the radio that you've never produced that just gets you chomping at the bit? Wow, I wish I could be in a studio with those guys. They're so interesting.
Well, I've always been a fan of the Arcade Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Mumford and Bowie's new album, I think, is, it's very heartfelt. It's good.
You are not selling it.
Well, it feels like you feel like you could do something with that.
You could do something
more with that.
I think, and Bo is very strange at the moment. He hasn't done anything for this album, and now he's just appeared on this Louis Vuitton advert on TV.
Yes. And it was the weirdest thing because nobody knew he was making a record. It just came out one day out of the ether. I mean, he's playing by his own rules at this point.
He is. Almost like he's planning for his death or something. I don't want to be morbid or anything. But
no,
it's,
that's not morbid.
It's like, okay. Well, always happens.
When you hear, like, the Arcade Fire album, I'm sure you bought it. And I'm sure you've spent time with it, right, Steve?
Yeah. And
you saw what James Murphy did. I mean, he's a great producer, I think. I love his production. And I love what he did with this record. Would it have been a very different sounding Arcade Fire album done it?
I have these big visions for people. For me, I mean, Wynn's voice, for me, sounds like Elvis Presley.
That's interesting.
So I think, you know, maybe melody is something that I would try and improve on, you know. But they wanted to make their Let's Dance. They wanted to make their you know, and they're creative.
And they nailed that.
Yes, and yeah. They are creative Canadians. And you know, you need to take your fans on a journey. Now, this is the part of the journey I wouldn't have been involved with. But okay. I would love to work with them at some point if they wanted to do a record that really showed, you know, because I've got this vision of him like Elvis.
You're not the dance party guy?
I'm too white.
All right. Before we run out of time, I want to let's talk about you two a little bit, because you've produced...
They just changed
many?
Manager, haven't they?
Yeah, I saw it. God. So Paul McGinnis is out, and Live Nation is going to run them now?
Yes,
is that what
and I spoke to Adam Clayton 2 days ago, and he never told me.
Wow.
And
why are they?
That's
why
a
are
big
they,
move I, this late.
Yeah.
Yeah, why are they? Why would they do something when it's worked, obviously, so brilliantly for them for so long?
Because I think Bono's favorite expression is, if it ain't broke, break it.
Oh, good. If it ain't broke, break it.
I know how far back you go to the very first U2 album, right?
Oh, I was the well-known producer, and they were these young 17-year-olds all sort of nervously looking at me.
They were sort of lucky to have you, kind of a thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was all because Ian Curtis committed suicide.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah,
I did tell you that story,
yeah.
So you've worked on The Joshua Tree and Octung Baby and All That You Leave Behind and How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb. So you are the U2 man. Now, the song that I have selected for you is one that you were not the primary producer on, if I understand correctly.
Well,
Eno and Daniel Lanois actually did production, but you get credit as an additional producer.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of Beautiful Day, and then I want to hear what that was all about.
It's a beautiful day.
Now, when you've already got Daniel Lanois, who, like you, is one of the most respected producers of all time, and Brian Eno, same deal, what do you come in, and how do you have three guys at the top all trying to run things at the same time?
It's not like that at all.
Okay.
What happens is that they work on the song, and they completely burn themselves out.
Okay.
And I love Brian, and I love Danny to death, but I'm sort of considered the person who can make it into a radio song.
You can okay.
And they don't look
you can
at
take it into that
yeah but
sphere.
I'm yeah there's sort of producers who it's all art and there's producers where it's all commerce, and I have this great belief that I'm somewhere in the middle and I can marry the art and the commerce together.
Art can live with commerce.
Oh, for me, absolutely.
Right.
So it's funny, when they gave me this song and I remember taking it home to my missus at the time and playing this is the one they want me to work on, this is the single. And I played the cassette, and she said, that's not very good, is it?
Really?
And you know what? I don't have it. I would love...
Yeah, no kidding.
That would be
the original. What difference did you make?
I'd love to bring it in and show. So it's...
What could we hear that you made different?
I think I gave it a little bit... It has an element of early U2 about it, which wasn't there at the time. So I sort of got Edge to do some of his more edge-like guitar, because at the time they were, yeah, I think, you know, sometimes you just forget.
Yeah.
You know, and I just reminded him, come on, Edge, you know, you do that thing, and we did that, and it wasn't...
Is it only because you had fresh ears that you were able to do that? I mean, if you were living with it, it seems like
maybe, but they bring me it, and it was actually that I produced their first three albums, and then from the Joshua Tree onwards, where they were 18 months into the album and not finished. Basically, McGinnis said to them, look, boys, you know, you're a big band, but we can't keep everyone on the payroll if you're just going to keep being in the studio. We need to finish this album.
Keep mucking about, as they say.
Yeah. When you work with Steve, he made records in 6 weeks to 3 months. Why don't you bring Steve back in to come and help you finish it off?
You're a closer.
I'm a closer.
That's what you do. You're a closer.
Like that Manuel Rivera, whatever his name.
Yes.
Is that his name?
You saw that.
I am the closer, actually. It's a good
Danger. Danger Mouse, I guess, has just been announced as being a producer on the new U2 album. Do you know him at all?
I've met him once. Brian, they call him, actually. Uh-huh. His name, you don't call him Mouse. Yeah, he's a good man.
We call him Mr. Danger.
Mr. Danger.
That's where we go.
Well, you know, Meatloaf, you call him Meat.
Sure.
Yeah, you know that.
I'd call him Meat, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Meat.
All right, Steve. I can't believe that we're out of time. And once again, we didn't get to do everything we wanted to do. But
oh,
you're doing
the
Juanes album. That's coming out at
Juanes,
some point.
Fantastic.
The Killers single is going to be out on December the 1st.
And I'm looking for work.
And you're looking for work.
You can't possibly be looking for work.
I'm looking for work. But I've got high standards.
Hey, go back and watch Jimmy Kimmel from last night. Do you have that recording? The Killers did a happy birthday song to him that I think you will
really
enjoy greatly.
Okay.
It's funny.
They have a great sense of humor. You know, his sense of Brandon's sense of the ridiculous is very good.
Yes, I agree.
And as is yours, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Lillywhite, his return appearance on the Kevin and Bean Show. Please make him happy. He's looking for chicks or something. Follow him on Twitter @SillyWhite, and we'll see you again soon, sir. Thank you, sir.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ, and you are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:57.
So playing in the NFL doesn't cause any kind of physical problems, right, for the players. There's no health danger in being a football player, right?
I think that is the result that the NFL has come to, yes.
Oh, wait. Everyone knows colliding with another human being at top speed is completely safe and, in fact, recommended.
The stories of concussions in the NFL is fascinating. How far back some people were worried about it, how much cover-up there was from the NFL. Yeah. We're going to talk all about that coming up just after the top of the hour.
Yeah, I bring it up because author Steve Fainaroo is going to be joining us. He's the co-author of League of Denial. That's next on K-Rock. First, though, Rob's got the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday.
Just put Kevin on a poster and say,
how dare you?
This is your brain on concussions. And just have that Kevin-y picture.
That was so illuminating for us a couple of months ago, wasn't it, Ralph, when we found out that Kevin had all those concussions playing high school sports?
It all fell into place for us.
Answered a lot of questions.
Oh. Yeah. Probably 8 or 9, but that's normal. That's normal for people who, if you play football.
Normal if you're a heavyweight boxer.
All right, but I'm just saying. Wait, what are we talking about?
Akon wants you to know, ladies, you gots to relax.
Okay.
Okay.
Akon tells reporters that women aren't built to mate with more than one party, he says, but men are because they're natural breeders. And the ladies need to, in his words, take more time to understand how men are built. So just stop it, ladies, expecting us only to have sex with you.
Right. But
not
we should,
other women.
We should not have sex with anyone else.
Well, no,
right?
Lisa, that's because you're not.
That's okay. Clear. You're built differently.
You aren't built to mate with more than one party, he says.
No, I mated with any parties, but.
Yeah, you have. We know the parties you go to. So there it is from Akon. That's
it sounds
science.
Like science to me,
it
Ralph.
Is. Of course it's science. And ladies, relax.
Okay.
John Gosselin. Remember that name?
The waiter.
Got the waiter, right.
Penis cut off? No.
No. Nope.
Different guy. That's
no
Bobbitt.
No concussion boy.
That's Bobbitt.
No, John Gosselin was of John and Kate plus 8 fame.
Oh, that poor bastard.
He and his wife Kate Gosselin had 8 children, and they had a very successful reality show. This was back before there was just a glut of every possible combination of children and parents and little people parents and Duggars with 21. And this was cutting edge back in the day, the how they followed this family around to capture their daily activities. And then, of course, mom and dad became celebrities, and Kate became a attention whore.
She was
and they
terrible.
Split up.
He was terrible.
And he blames, really, reality television for ruining his life.
They were both terrible.
Yeah, they're both bad, bad people, and those children are just horribly horribly disadvantaged. But John Gosselin now blames reality television for ruining his life. So, naturally, he has signed on to appear on Couples Therapy, the reality show.
All right.
Oh, sure.
With
his
new girlfriend, Liz Janetta, who has 3 children of her own, by the way. They're going to go to Couples Therapy on television to work out the issues in their relationship.
Isn't it funny that for a lot of single guys, they would meet this woman and go, ooh, 3 kids. I don't know, man. That's a lot.
He's like, woo, just 3? Yeah! I scored!
That's like an empty nest for John Gosselin.
Oh, I can handle this kid with 1 arm. Give me 3 more. My left arm isn't busy. Speaking of couples therapy, even though she doesn't have a boyfriend, backdoor teen mom, Farrah Abraham, is going to be on that show.
Wait.
Because she's desperate for attention. She has to be on reality television, so they're going to put her on Couples Therapy.
Farrah Abramson.
Say what? Farrah Abramson is going to go on the show.
Couples Therapy.
Couples Therapy.
Couples.
In order to work with a therapist there and talk about why she doesn't have a couple.
Define couple.
Well, she's not part of a couple. Couple.
She's not part of one, so she's going to go in couples therapy to find out why she's not part of a couple. While the other couples are talking about being a couple.
Outside.
It's the end times.
But I can avoid all of that just by avoiding couples therapy,
well, that's
right?
An option, I suppose. Okay. Don't watch couples therapy.
Is she also in meetings for ex-astronauts? Is she doing that, too?
Yes, she is, because she wants to know why she's not an astronaut. Glad to hear Ryan Seacrest is finally getting some work.
Oh, good.
He has got a new game show in the works.
$1 million second.
100 million man second march for a dollar. No, this new game show, according to Deadline.com, will feature kids competing against one another in elimination challenges revolving around viral videos. From predicting what will happen to the viral videos, in the viral videos, or guessing which viral video is the most popular according to the studio audience that will be judging the viral videos.
This is the worst idea I've ever heard for a show.
The show will be called Viral and will be rolled out next summer.
That's a disaster waiting to happen.
It's not nearly complicated enough. What about, how do you cross off against each other and then get the bonus points by closing the door on the other participant inside the giant hourglass? That's what we need back.
What the hell's going on?
Are they also going to do this one in a glass box in Times Square?
I certainly hope so.
And it has to be on 24/7 on the web, right?
Absolutely.
So the kids have to pick the best viral video, but it's not based on views. It's based on a studio audience who is also looking at the videos?
Yes.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And they're also going to predict what will happen next in the video as they watch it. That's part of the game as well.
That's not a game.
No, Kevin, you're so wrong.
It's
the television event of the year.
Ah.
I'm sure it will be sold to us as when they start putting the commercials on the air.
Sure.
Again, as you said the last time Ryan insisted on putting a game show on the air, look at Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Right.
Simple, clean, easy, fun, play-along, smash.
The only game shows that people like. Give me one thing to do.
Yep. Right,
what?
Right.
I have to fill in the letters and guess what word's up on the board?
Wheel of Fortune. Right.
Love that game.
How much does that car retail for?
Boom.
Price is right.
Love it. Jeopardy? Yep. Question.
Give me an answer. I'll give you the question. Boom. Simple. Not guess the viral video and where it stands according to our audience, but also what happens next and why you slam out the closed door policy of the ampersand button.
Remember Oh Sit? Was that the name of the musical chair?
Oh, Sit, yeah. Oh, there were a lot of rules in Oh Sit.
They would batter each other.
But if you cross the water bridge, you can only go if you're following the person behind you in the blue sweater. Once you get to the chair, then you must rotate until you find the secret card that's beneath the cushion.
That's crazy.
Madness.
Where's the outrage there?
Today's celebrity birthdays, Rev Run. From Run DMC is 49 years old today. Patrick Warburton, you know him from Rules of Engagement or perhaps Family Guy. 49 years old today. Josh Duhamel is 41. Travis Barker, our friend from Blink 182,
Give the drummer some.
We were watching them in the Red Bull Sound Space.
Sure you were.
And when Travis gets behind the drums, he makes everything better. You find yourself, you can't watch anything but Travis. It's fascinating to watch that guy drum.
He's a terrific drummer.
He's amazing.
38 years old today. Olga Kurylenko from Quantum of Solace and most recently Magic City.
Yeah.
34 years old today. She was also in Hitman. Remember? She had the tattoo on her face.
Yes, I do. I remember at the time saying, she's hot enough that she has a tattoo on her face and you're still attracted to her.
Still liking it. And our own of our own. He doesn't want to talk about it, but we'll just mention really quick. Bean Baxter. Bean Baxter.
Nine!
He's nine.
Bean Baxter. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
We are very much punching above our weight here on the Kevin Bean Show today. We had a 5-time Grammy winner with us last hour, and now we've got an author on the phone who has won a Pulitzer Prize. What the hell is he doing talking to the Kevin Bean Show? He is Steve Faneroo. He is the co-author of the book that everyone is talking about, League of Denial, the NFL, Concussions, and the Battle for Truth. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the Kevin Bean Show today. How are you?
Thank you. Good. How you guys
Steve
doing?
Steve is also the senior writer for ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine, and your book was kind of the one that put the NFL concussion story really in front of everybody. And what's the reaction been like from the NFL with how much you covered this story?
Yeah, with the NFL, it's been pretty much radio silence ever since the book came out. The day, curiously, the day before the book came out and the Frontline documentary aired, Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, issued a letter to some 10 million fans reassuring them that football was safe and that they were doing everything that they could to make the game safer and deal with the concussion issue and preserve the game. But since the book came out, and there's been a lot of attention, we really haven't heard anything from them. And I think that's pretty much been their position. I think they're hoping that it will, you know, it will go away.
Steve, we don't have as much time as we'd like to with you. We're going to keep you a couple of breaks. But can you take us back to Mike Webster of the Steelers and sort of encapsulate that whole situation and how that all began?
Sure, yeah. So Mike Webster, who's the, you know, the great center for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s, you know, the anchor of four Steelers dynasty, four Steelers Super Bowl teams. He played 17 years in the NFL. At the end of his career, his family began to notice dramatic changes. You know, he literally went mad. This is a guy who was, you know, a very stable person. Somebody was thought of as almost a coach on the field. You know, he called the plays in the huddle at times. But suddenly, at the end of his career, he was having trouble managing his life. He couldn't manage his finances. He had bursts of anger with his family. He started writing literally thousands of letters to his family and friends trying to describe what was happening to him. He started to stockpile an arsenal of weapons that he fantasized about using them to kill NFL and Steelers officials. So this is a guy who became pretty much unrecognizable to his family and friends. And he died at the age of 50, and his body was taken to the Allegheny County Coroner's Office, where a young forensic pathologist named Bennett Amalu decided to autopsy his brain and examine it, simply because he had heard anecdotally some of these issues around Webster's behavior, and he thought maybe there was something there. And he found, ultimately, the first case of an NFL player who had this neurodegenerative disease called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which has now been diagnosed in more than 50 players. And that moment really, it's the center of our book, and it really touched off where we are today, whereas this is a real health crisis.
Encapsulate, if you can, the NFL's response for the first, I don't know how long it was, 10 or 20 years, how they dealt with that.
Well, they basically denied it. So the title of our book, League of Denial, sort of says it all. The NFL, for a period of two decades, basically did everything it could to deny that this was an issue. So that meant putting together a research committee. The NFL commissioner at the time, Paul Tagliabue, put together a committee that spent the next 16 years putting out papers saying that concussions weren't a problem in the NFL, that NFL players don't get brain damage, that they're impervious to it.
And most of the doctors were team doctors, right? I mean, they were basically on the NFL payroll.
Yeah, so they packed the committee. The guy who headed it was Tagliabue's own personal physician and a rheumatologist. He had no experience in brain research. And the committee was filled with other team doctors, you know, who had been sending players back on the field. So a lot of people regarded it as kind of a sham committee. And, you know, at the same time, you had other doctors, independent neuroscientists, many of them who love football, who were trying to get the league's attention and say, look, this is a major problem you've got on your hands. You need to deal with it. And the NFL used its power and its resources to attack those people and to try to discredit them.
As a result of your book coming out, obviously it went right back onto the front pages, this story, and a lot of NFL players have been asked about it. What is your reaction when you see somebody like Aaron Rodgers who says, quote, I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen to us on the field, but I love playing football. I know the risks I take when I step on the field. I think we all do as professional athletes. I'm more than happy to take those risks because I love to play. I love to entertain. I love to be around the guys, and I love to be part of something special.
It doesn't surprise me at all, and I respect that opinion. You know, I think that the culture of the NFL is this, you know, incredibly violent, Darwinian world in which you have to be strong and you have to have a mentality to play at that level. I mean, I think one of the things that really comes through in our book is just the sheer raw violence of the league and the physical force and the incredible toll that it takes on your body to play. And Rodgers is right. If you love it and you can, it's a lucrative profession and you can do it, then that's the attitude you have to take. I think some people, particularly at the lower levels, are reassessing that. And I think that's one of the more
lower levels, meaning younger people.
Yeah, I think at the you know, we just Mark and my brother Mark, he and I wrote the book together, and you know, we had a story at ESPN today that said that Pop Warner participation numbers are down nearly 10% over the last 2 years. And I think it's in part because people are looking at this and they're understanding in a more fundamental way what the risks are. And they're trying to put that into the context of their love of football and decide, you know, what do they want for their kids. And it's a really complicated question, I think.
I think there are a couple of different things that we're kind of all asking the NFL to do. We're asking them to partly make the game safer, and I wonder if it's even possible to have football if you're putting a product out on the field where nobody can ever get a concussion. And the other thing we're trying to get them to do, I guess, is to take care of these players that have already been through the system, and that was part of the giant settlement that was reached recently, too. Weren't there hundreds of millions of dollars that were doled out to former players who had these health issues?
Yeah, so the league, for this period of 2 decades, denied that this was a problem at all. And so the players sued, 4,500 players sued the league for concealing the effects of football and brain damage. And the NFL paid out nearly $1 billion, $765 million to be exact, to these players.
Without admitting guilt.
Without admitting guilt, exactly. And so I think a lot of people believe that the NFL was, you know, they paid that settlement in part because they didn't want to be exposed any further in terms of litigation, you know, discovery and testimony and having NFL officials forced to testify.
Right.
But the issue is, you know, it's a scientific issue. You know, it's a medical issue. And so, you know, I don't think it's nearly over. I think it's actually just getting started, and the science is going to lead it. You know, the thing is, nobody really knows how prevalent this is. We now know with certainty that there is a link, some link between football, the trauma associated with football and brain damage. How prevalent it is, no one really knows. We know there's more than 50 players now who have been diagnosed with it in the last 8 years, and you can only be diagnosed after you're dead. So,
wow.
You know, so what does that mean exactly? Some people think, you know, there's a woman in our book, Anne McKee, who thinks there are a shockingly high number of NFL players are going to get it, that she thinks that nearly all might have it in some form. Other people think that's fueling hysteria, unwarranted hysteria around the sport. And I think we're just trying to lay out the information as it comes. And, you know, and people are making decisions on the fly now. It's about, you know, our most popular sport. I mean, it's a huge, huge business and cultural attraction now at the NFL. I mean, $100 billion, you know, it's a $100 billion industry. I mean, it's amazing.
Much more to talk about with our guest, Steve Fainaro. He is the co-author of League of Denial, the best-selling book out available everywhere now. The League of Denial, the NFL Concussions, and the Battle for Truth. We'll take a very quick break. Come back more with Steve right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Steve Fainaro on the line with us. He is the co-author of the outstanding book called League of Denial, the NFL Concussions, and the Battle for Truth. He is a senior writer for ESPN.com and a Pulitzer Prize winner, which I would never get tired of saying if that were me, Steve.
One of the most
fascinating chapters to me and the tragic and sad ending to Junior Seau in his life just a couple of years ago. And I know there's no way to know whether he was aware of what might be happening to his brain because he had seen it happen to other players like Mike Webster of the Steelers. But is that the general thinking in the world, is that he shot himself in the chest because he wanted his brain to be available for people to continue the research on what was going on?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, and I don't think we know the answer. You know, there's another player, Dave Duerson, who is a defensive back for the Chicago Bears, who shot himself in the chest in 2011 and explicitly left a note saying that he wanted his brain to be donated to science. And when his brain was examined, he had this brain disease, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. But when Seau killed himself in the same manner in his beach house near San Diego, he didn't leave a note. And so it seems pretty clear to his family that he was aware that he was a dramatically different person, that he was not in control of his life. His family was groping for answers, and I think one of the more poignant parts of our book is reading his family talk about how they tried to figure out what was wrong with what was wrong with him. And you know, his daughter writes an English paper about her estrangement from her dad. She goes and confronts him and tries to get him to deal with it, and he just simply can't. And then when he shoots himself, his brain is ultimately donated to science, and it's and it's found to have this disease, which is normally associated with somebody in their 70s or 80s. And say I was 43,
right.
And you know, and his family is crestfallen because they feel like he wasn't ultimately yet a disease. It wasn't something that had to do with them.
Let me ask a question because I'm very conflicted about this topic because A, you don't want guys to have brain problems from the NFL and end up losing all of their faculties and emotional swings back and forth and divorce and all kinds of issues.
Right.
But I love football.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It seems like if you take your book to the ultimate end, is there going to be football? I know they have changed the rules some, the helmet-to-helmet rule and that kind of stuff, but is it possible to keep them safe in such a dangerous sport?
Yeah, well, I guess I would say I'm in the same boat as you. I'm a 49ers season ticket holder, and I played in high school, and I love it. So does my brother, we didn't set out to write this book because we wanted to change the NFL. I think one of the more curious things for me, and I think unexpected, is that a lot of people are telling us they can't look at the game in the same way after reading our book or watching the film. And I that was unexpected to me. I can understand why now when you have it all laid out that way and you see what it is. But I don't know how to reconcile that really because we're not out obviously to kill football. But at the same time, when you look at the evidence lined up, and when you look at what the NFL did to bury that evidence,
right?
I think you come away with this, this sort of queasy feeling about what exactly is it that I'm rooting for, and I don't know where that's headed. I think a lot of people are making that assessment now, but of course the NFL is still huge and will continue to be huge, I think, and so I think we'll just have to see where it goes. Like I said before, I think the science is where it is going to lead us. If it turns out that, 500 players have this disease or 5,000 players have this disease, then I think that's going to really dramatically change football. But we're not nearly there yet.
All games are going to look like the Pro Bowl when it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no defense.
Well, it's interesting because, in the story we had in Pop Warner today, there's, Pop Warner is considering a rule that would take all linemen out of the 3-point stance. So to eliminate this headbanging that occurs on every play.
Right.
So what would football look like that? What would football look like if you took the helmets away? Would anybody watch? I don't know.
Right. In our remaining moments with you, Steve, I know you've seen this quote, but Troy Aikman is one of the many NFL players. The Dallas Cowboy Hall of Famer was asked about the Frontline documentary and about your book with your brother. And he said, when asked about his kid, he said, "I do not have a son, but if I had a son, I wouldn't necessarily discourage him from playing football, but I don't know that I would encourage him to play either." And that's you talk about the Pop Warner statistics. That's something that millions of families are dealing with across the country right now. What would your advice to them be if they have a young man who loves football and wants to play?
Well, my advice would be to look at all the evidence that's out there and make a personal decision. I mean, I just don't feel like I'm in a position to be recommending what people should do. There's a chilling part in our book where Aikman gets a concussion in the 1993 NFC Championship
game. That was crazy.
He can't remember what happened, where he is. He then plays in the Super Bowl and can't remember that game.
What happened? And then you answer, and then 5 minutes later, he's asking the exact same questions again.
Yeah. And I think it really, his agent ultimately goes on a crusade to try to make the NFL aware that this is a major problem. And, of course, he runs into the same brick walls as everybody else. I don't know. I mean, I have a 15-year-old son who now keeps saying that he wants to go play football. When I was covering the Iraq War, he talked about wanting to go to Iraq.
Right. So, you need to cover something softer.
I don't know where this is coming from. But I don't honestly know because I love football and I love playing football and I understand why people love to do it. At the same time, it's your brain. And, you only get one, obviously, and when it comes to your kids, you want them to be, everything.
Of course.
So I don't know what the answer to the question is.
Well, it is a fascinating book. Obviously, it's so well researched and so well written. And Steve Fainarou is our guest, the co-author of League of Denial, the NFL Concussions and Battle of Truth. The book is available everywhere in stores. Or you can buy it, of course, online, Amazon.com or wherever. And if you're like Kevin and Bean most of the time where we say reading is for losers, you can also see the Frontline documentary that is posted on the PBS.org website. And you can just watch that if you want to, if you want the 90-minute TV experience. That's okay with you too, right, Steve?
No, no, that's not okay. Go out and
buy, buy the book. That's what I meant. Forget the documentary.
Buy the book.
Buy
right.
the book. All right, Steve, thank you so much for the time on the Kevin and Bean Show today. We enjoyed
thank
talking
you.
To you.
Thanks for having me. Thank
you. Quick reminder, if you want to join us for night number two of the 24th annual K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas Concert on Sunday, December 8th at the Shrine, we would like you to be there. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at noon for K-Rock Street Team members. Just go to krock.com, make sure you sign up, and that you get the password so you can buy the tickets, see Arcade Fire, Phoenix, and so much more. What do you want to bet before we go to Dr. Drew here, Kevin, that he's going to poo-poo all the fun that we're having with Toronto Mayor Rob Ford?
I want to vote for him.
I want to bet that Dr. Drew is going to say somehow what Mayor Ford is doing is bad or should not be encouraged or is a disservice to his constituents. He's going to throw a big wet blanket on the party. Hey, Dr. Drew, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Okay, said enough. See you next week.
Look, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the mayor, and I know you've covered it on your HLN nighttime show as well, is he claims that he is not an addict. He is not addicted to drugs. He is not addicted to alcohols. But sometimes he likes to go out and have a good time. Tell me why he's wrong.
Oh, hold on a second. You mean there's an alcoholic who's denying he's an alcoholic? That is shocking.
Is that a thing? Have you ever heard of it?
I can't believe it. That's so stunning to me. What the hell? Oh, no, wait a minute. Or is it that I spent half my life trying to confront that denial? Yeah, so denial's part of the deal. The sad part is that his family is maintaining that denial around him. His sister, who is a severe drug addict, who had a husband who was a drug addict, who shot her in the face, good times.
Holy
yeah,
crap.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Sat there and said, oh, I'm an addict, but he's not. He's clearly not. If he has a little drinking excess, what are you going to do?
So he's a current mayor. It's the largest city in Canada, right?
Yeah.
Toronto?
Yes. He holds the reins of power in the largest city in Canada, and when this whole scandal first broke, many of the Canadians seem to have joined with their brethren, Mr. Kevin here. And, his approval ratings went up at first.
When he admitted that he did crack, that he smoked crack, his approval ratings went up 5 points.
They did, immediately. And everyone decided that's the kind of guy they'd like to hang out with, which is probably true. I he's probably a nice guy, a good guy, although he does seem to be doing the best Chris Farley imitation I've ever seen.
Yeah,
he absolutely. And he's going to probably end up just like Chris Farley, too.
Well, that's the sad part. You know, every day I have to sort of remind myself as I hear people making fun of him, and it is funny. I mean, it's not funny.
It's hard not to laugh when the guy says, to be honest, I'm not positive if I smoke crack, I was blackout drunk. You go, whoa.
And I don't have a problem with alcohol.
Right.
So I had Lonnie Love on my HLM program, and she goes, look, I'm fat, he's fat, and he's a crack addict, and that's hilarious. And I thought, wow, it is funny, but it reminded me, this is kind of a different topic, but it reminded me, you know, our buddy Jimmy has been in some hot water for making a joke, and how people have lost track of the fact that it's okay to laugh at something and be when it's funny and be concerned about the human being who has a condition that made us laugh. Those are okay things to do at the same time.
I agree. Let me ask you this. Is there anything different in the way this story is being handled because it's crack cocaine? Because people sometimes don't get – crack cocaine seems like a funny drug for a guy to be doing it. It seems like an unusual drug for a guy to be caught doing and admitting.
Well, yes. The answer is yes. It's not a typical recreational drug, right? Crack is something that's, you know, you're pretty much into or you're not.
I know the crack is whack.
Good, Kevin. Good. Mm-hmm. Say it again.
Is it possible to be a recreational crack cocaine user, Dr. Drew?
It really doesn't exist if that's your primary drug. If you're using cocaine, that's what you like, and you graduate to crack, it's game on. If you're an alcoholic and that's your primary drug, and you're just starting to wildly use other things, you're starting to take pills, you're starting to do this, that, and the other thing, then you can see this. It's possible. So he's not necessarily a crack addict. He is, make no mistake about it. Just as if he were telling me across the room what his symptoms were, I'm watching his symptoms across a wire through the video. He meets every criteria I know for alcoholism.
And there's no such thing as a recall for him, right?
Apparently the Canadian law is that they can't get rid of him. Although there was one, we found one provision that said basically if somebody's so sick they can't function, they can require them to step down for a while, not you, get rid of them.
You are a doctor. Do you need to answer that?
No, that's
right. Let me ask you one more thing, and then we will let you answer your phone, Dr. Drew, is do you see cases all the time of people who have a professional job like Mayor Ford does, who are able to do the kind of drugs and alcohol they do and still function and still get up and not miss work and show up and get their duties done?
Yeah, it's one of the wonderful things about addiction is that you have, first of all, to be an addict or alcoholic, you have to be able to withstand the using. And they are bionic. They can get through it. It's amazing what I've seen people do. And to answer your question specifically, men particularly, the very last area where their functioning fails is work. The family can fall apart. Their health can fall apart. Their finances can fall apart. Their legal status can fall apart. But they still manage to function at work.
No kidding.
When the work starts collapsing, you know they are really at the end of the line, typically.
Isn't
that
interesting?
Work is collapsing, guys. Let's be fair. That's what's happening here.
You can watch Dr. Drew on call on HLN Monday through Friday nights at 6 in the fine family of DrDrew.com or Podcast.One podcast, including the Dr. Drew podcast, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Mike and Dr. Drew podcast, and let's not forget Loveline 5 nights a week here on K-Rock. Thanks, Doc. Have a great week, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:57.
Hey, Rob, grab and go.
Get a little seasick.
That was just a sound effect.
Oh, I thought we were actually on a boat.
No, we are not. No.
Hey, listen, boys and girls, how would you like to go to a very special fan event being thrown on the lot at Sony Pictures for The Amazing Spider-Man 2? Even Splashy the Dating Dolphin wants to go to this
right?
event. That's how hot it is. Not only get to see about a dozen minutes or so of unseen footage from the film. No one has seen this until they show it to you. But then it's a special meet and greet Q&A session with Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Jamie Foxx, of course, who plays the villain in this piece. We want to give it to real Spidey fans, though. We don't just want to slap it into the hands of some yahoo just calling up to win a radio contest. So we're going to do a little trivia in the next hour. Call in now if you'd like to play our trivia game. And if you know everything there is to know about Spider-Man, call right now. 1-800-520-1067. Let's take a look at the showbiz news. Courtney Stodden, now that she's a free woman, separating from her husband Doug Hutchinson, is now threatening to expose the creepy secrets of their marriage in a tell-all book. Ha! Like she can write a book. She said she's ready to dish the dirt on their sex life and also is in talks to star in a reality show, The Courtney Stodden Show. Why not? God. Let's just give everybody one. Let's just cut to the chase.
Ralph, I think you were out the day we played some clips from her E! Interview where she talked about how she knew her marriage was over when she was in England on the Big Brother show there, and she realized she was super horny and didn't care who she had sex with.
Yeah.
That's how she knew it was time maybe to leave Doug behind.
Yeah, she realized, I'm 18, there's a wide world of penises out there that I have yet to experiment with.
Anyone in the house? Anyone? Hands up.
Penis? You? Penis?
Bean, we should take care of this off the air probably, but turn your mic up a little bit.
Okay.
Having trouble hearing you.
A little bit. They're doing a new version of Beowulf on Sci-Fi Network.
Finally.
The epic poem. Of course, one of the most important works of Anglo-Saxon literature.
All the best TV shows come from poems.
That's true. But this is an epic poem. This isn't just, you know.
Yeah, it's to us.
This isn't The Once Was a Man from Nantucket. This is a big deal. Beowulf, one of the oldest and greatest stories in literature, coming to sci-fi as a series. Of course, Beowulf was the hero who helped out the Danish king by attacking the monster who was plaguing his land, Grendel.
Obviously.
Grendel was his name. The adaptation. No one has said whether it's going to be a modern adaptation. I can't imagine. Although, maybe they do that with the Grimm fairy tales.
Yeah.
Maybe they could do that here. Perhaps it'll be more like Game of Thrones. It'll be a throwback to medieval times. I think that's probably more likely.
This Romeo and Juliet. It's going to be a Starbucks barista.
Huh?
I'm just saying, they modernize these shows where they have, you know, some classic television character, but they just put him as a contemporary 21st century person. It's always kind of weird.
I gotcha.
Even Romeo and Juliet, you know, has an update where they try to make it sort of current day, and it's sort of weird.
Yeah, it is. I think this would be better as a period piece. Don Cheadle has been announced. He's going to star as Miles Davis in the biopic about the legendary jazz trumpet player. He's also going to direct the film.
All right.
I'm in.
That should be cool.
Fascinating life, Miles Davis.
Yeah, Miles Davis had quite a life. Miles
quit the music business in the mid-70s and then returned in the 80s. Also famously had battles with substance abuse and things like that. Don's also co-writing the script. All right, Don Cheadle, you can do it all.
Co-writing the script. Directing, sorry.
Yes.
All right.
All right, you win, Don Cheadle. You're better than us. Today's celebrity birthdays, Run from Run DMC. Joseph Simmons is 49 years old today. Actor Patrick Warburton, of course, plays Joe on Family Guy. And from Rules of Engagement, 49 years old. Josh Duhamel is 41. Travis Barker turns 38 years old today. Olga Kurylenko from Quantum of Solace and Magic City. She's 34.
Yeah.
And our own Bean Baxter celebrates his birthday today. Bean, you should be getting a knock on your door soon. We've sent over a couple dozen cupcakes, donuts, and some lottery tickets for you. We want you to have those and enjoy those. So you got,
as we do with all of our friends.
That's right. You've got donuts and lottery tickets coming your way, Bean, to celebrate your birthday.
It's like an odd choice for me. Huh? Okay.
That's what we always give our friends, the people we like.
Everybody
we
like.
We give them donuts and lottery tickets for their birthday.
It'd be a lot funnier if you knew the behind the scenes to that one.
I'm as out of the loop as every listener right now.
We'll fill you in later. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 9 minutes after 9 o'clock.
Woo!
It's a great prize. A pair of passes to the Amazing Spider-Man 2's fan event at Sony Studios. You get a meet and greet with the cast. And by the way, when I say with the cast, we're talking about Emma Stone, you guys. Yeah. We're talking about you being in the same room as Emma Stone. And yeah, Jamie Foxx and Andrew Garfield too. But Emma Stone, come on.
Plus, you get a chance to see her. I'd never stop.
You get a chance to see 12 minutes of exclusive footage from the movie The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is not in theaters until May 2nd of 2014. Ralph, what are we doing here?
Well, I want to give it to a real Spidey fan. I want to just slap this into the hands of Andy Jamoke.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you trivia questions about Spider-Man's greatest villains. I'll describe them and give their secret identity. You have to tell me the name of Spider-Man's villains. It's a game we call, appropriately enough, The Bad Boy.
Bad guys, bad guys. What you gonna do? Name the Spidey villain and you will be good. Bad guys, bad guys. What you gonna do? Name the Spidey villain and you will be good. If you want tickets to the Spider-Man event, name the bad dude and you will rule. So don't get it wrong, looking like a fool. So get it right and you'll be cool. Bad guys, bad guys. What you gonna do? Name the Spidey villain and you will be good. Oh yeah, man.
What? I guess it's... Bad guys, I guess is what we're calling it.
What?
Bad guys.
Bad
right.
guys.
You gotta go with guy? Why not boy?
I don't know.
Bad boy.
Bad guys because they're bad guys. They're villains.
Right.
They're bad guys.
I hear
it's
you.
All the same.
All right. Let's start with Andre. Hi there.
Hello. Andre.
Hello. Yes.
Andre, you know your Spider-Man villains?
Yeah, I think I do.
All right, here's your question. Flint Marko became a villain when he came into contact with granular silica that had been irradiated by an experimental reactor. Turned him into a shapeshifter.
Yeah, wouldn't that be Sandman?
That would be the Sandman. You're absolutely
Nicely
correct, sir.
Done.
Well done.
Wow.
You're going.
I did not
just
think he was
going
to come up with that.
It's just that simple. You guess it right, you win.
There's no drawing. All right.
We've got three pairs of tickets to give away. First three people who are right are going.
Let's go to Jason. Hi there.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Jason. Quentin Beck, a Hollywood special effects wizard and stuntman.
Mysterio
is correct.
He interrupted your question.
How about
with
that?
The answer.
Jason's the real deal. You're going to the fan event.
Yay!
Bad guys, bad guys.
Congratulations.
All right, two for two. We only have one pair of tickets left. Who's next?
Bobby.
Hey.
Hi, Bobby. Bobby. Bobby, hi, Bobby, a lady, by the way, a comic book fan who's a lady who would like to go to this.
Yes, sir.
Who are you calling for?
Stop it.
Boyfriend, husband, son?
Myself.
Yourself. All right, here you go. Dr. Otto Octavius, a brilliant and respected nuclear physicist, designed a set of highly advanced mechanical arms.
Dr. Octopus?
Dr. Octopus is correct.
You got three in a row.
Boom! That's how we roll.
How does that work?
Letting our geek flags fly.
Nicely done. Congratulations. Thanks for playing the game.
Bad guys, bad guys.
I think that part's over. Pretty sure that
has been said since I left.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 9:34. Tomorrow morning, we are going to tell you all about the ultimate K-Rock almost acoustic Christmas experience.
Wow, that sounds intense.
It is intense.
It's
We're going to give you the opportunity to, we're going to have an auction. We're trying to raise some money here, Ralph, is what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to be auctioning off two sold-out tickets in the pit the night of your choice. VIP.
My choice? I get to choose where they go?
You don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is a K-Rock Almost Christmas we're talking about. So you pick which night you want. Sold-out tickets, of course, in the pit. VIP artist access. You get to introduce a band from the show. So talk about the greatest acoustic experience you could possibly have, and then times 10 because you're one of the stars of the thing. That's what we're auctioning off starting tomorrow here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. And all the proceeds are going directly to the Red Cross Disaster Relief to help with the devastation in the Philippines. Great cause, right?
Yes.
So we're unveiling all of that information tomorrow right here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Uh-huh. This Philippine thing really hit home to Bean.
Well, sure.
As he has a young Filipino woman working at his house.
Right.
You know, we've talked to Kevin's housekeeper, Lapita, before. Mm-hmm. And what a miserable job that poor woman has.
Yeah.
I have Lon, who we've talked about on the show before, who has been working for me for many, many years. Very nice lady. She grew up in Philadelphia, Ralph.
Oh, well, there you go.
As a matter of fact. But
are you confusing Philadelphia with the Philippines? Because they're very different. Yeah, very different locations.
If I was telling the story, that would be a real concern.
She moved to America 40 years ago, has been living in the United States for more than 40 years, grew up, started in the Philippines, worked mm-hmm. her way eventually to Seattle, yet speaks barely a word of English. And I don't want to get into a tirade here, but I feel like if I moved to any foreign country, I could learn a basic communication skills in that language in 40 years. I really do.
And you should. If you're going to another country, you should learn to speak their language eventually.
So I see Lon for the first time since the horrible typhoon that just devastated so much of the Philippine Islands. Hundreds of thousands of people got no place to live, and it's decimated. It's terrible. And I want to talk to her about it, but it's always such a chore to talk to Lon. So I spent 3 minutes yesterday. It is. It's because there's too much transit.
I feel so bad for you. It must be exhausting trying to talk.
He takes a nap, and then he gets up, and then he gets...
You know, 3 days when he sees her, he goes, ugh. Makes that noise that he makes with us. Yeah,
but give me a protein shake. This is going to be a while.
I like her very much. She's a very sweet lady, and I wanted to communicate to her. Look, I'm starting to talk to you like you don't speak English.
That's correct.
So I wanted to talk to her about how her family was doing back home in the Philippines. So I'm like... very, very painstakingly trying to ask, how is your family doing with, and I'm making the hand signals, with the typhoon, with the big storm?
What's the hand signal for a typhoon?
He's like a hula dancer. He's doing this, making waves with his hands.
There's nothing funny about that situation, but Bean talking about it is funny.
How are your relatives doing with the storm?
You're slowing down a crazy amount.
Relatives.
So 3-4 maybe minutes into the conversation, I feel like I'm finally getting the point across and I'm going to get an answer. And I do. And it's that she's from Vietnam.
She's not from the Philippines at all.
Never really been to the Philippines. Doesn't have any relatives in the Philippines. She's actually from a completely different Asian country. And maybe I should have known that in the last 10 years been working in my house.
Bean's a dick like 24-7. He tries once to have a nice conversation with somebody and it goes south.
If you had spent more than 30 seconds dealing with her, maybe you would have known what country she came from.
From Vietnam.
I did feel like a big giant moron, I'll tell you that.
That's because you were a big giant moron.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, so that's how.
Good times.
That's Bean's always said all Asian people are like. Remember that? Racist bastard.
Anyway, the auction tomorrow is going to benefit wherever Bean's nanny is from.
Nanny?
Whatever she is.
Did she raise him from a child?
She did, yes.
We will have all the details of that first thing tomorrow morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. It's definitely something you're going to want to get in on because it's going to be a great, great weekend for you. And we hope to raise a lot of money for whatever country that is. All right, Ralph is here now. Time for our final look at the showbiz being here on a Thursday morning.
One more time for the uninitiated. It's tickets to your choice of show and then... you get to intro one of the bands.
And you get backstage.
And you get backstage.
VIP artist access. Uh-huh. And by the way, I asked in the meeting, Ralph, this isn't the BS backstage. This is the real backstage.
True blue backstage.
Yeah. So there you go.
Wow. That's very impressive. Speaking of events, tonight, my good friend Kevin Ryder and I are going to be playing a little poker at San Manuel Indian Bingo and Casino. It's their 20K poker play. The top 10 finishers in the tournament will all get a taste of that $20,000 in prize money.
Apparently, they have a limited amount of walk-ups tonight. If you want to sit down, there's no buy-in to join the tournament. You can just walk up, and if there's room, they say there's a limited amount of seats still available for tonight's poker tournament. So if you just want to come to San Manuel tonight and put your name in, they will find you a seat, and you can play poker with me and Kevin. First come, first serve.
What time does that start? I do not
have that information.
I don't either.
Wow, you both should know that going to the
We're going. Well, here's the thing. We're going to go early and get a room. Kevin and I. We're going to knock it out.
We are.
We're going to bang it out for a couple hours.
You're exhausted for this thing.
No, we're gonna take a nap because, you know, we've been up early, and then we're going to go right to San Manuel. So we don't really know what time it is happening because we're planning on going super early.
Gotcha.
It's at 7:30.
7:30.
And you have to be over 21. 21
over 21. Right. So if you want to play the game, if it starts at 7:30, the tournament kicks off at 7:30, and you want to use one of these walk-up seats, you probably should get there earlier than 7:30.
Two.
Go now. Just stand around. All right. Of course, all day we've been celebrating Bean's birthday. Bean, I hope you're enjoying your donuts and lottery tickets that we sent up your way. And yesterday, another K-Rock alum, Jimmy Kimmel, had his birthday.
That's right.
He was celebrating last night on his late-night television program, Jimmy Kimmel Live. The Killers were his special guest. And being the nice guys that they are, they wrote a special original birthday song for Jimmy that they performed live on the show last night.
That's pretty cool. These guys have a good sense of humor.
I think he may have been surprised by the content, however. I know earlier in the show, Jimmy was seen talking to this guy, suggesting, you know, my calves are really muscular. Maybe you could work my muscular calves into the song. Or people always wonder if I get my eyebrows shaped because they really like my eyebrows. He was trying to talk about positive aspects of himself that they could work into a song.
And did they do that?
The Killers went in a different direction. They went in the direction of he is old and soon going to be dead.
Oh, that's a much funnier direction.
Here's their song.
Oh, birthday, Jimmy, it's your birthday. Your number of tired jokes are few. We're gonna dig a grave to hold you. How will you die? Will you buy an old man in your bed? Will the people cry to learn you're dead? Will your heart explode in your chest? Will you mourn the sins left unconfessed? Will it be a car crash, twisted metal wreck? Will you fall down the stairs and break your neck? Or choke on a bone, drown in the mud? Jimmy, how will it end? Old man Jimmy is soon to die.
Old man Jimmy is soon to die.
Soon to die. That's great.
How did Mr. Kimmel take it?
Jimmy Kimmel, very angry.
Jimmy Kimmel was 46.
Still alive.
What?
Still alive.
Well, that seems anticlimactic.
I think they were just predicting his death soon.
Kevin, I don't know if you heard about this new Hollywood phenomenon, but it's right up your alley.
What is it?
There's a very popular joint in Hollywood called the Powder Room. Familiar with the Powder Room?
I'm not.
Well, let me tell you a little something about my friend Kevin first before I tell you this story. I have seen Kevin in very nice restaurants take a bite of a sweet premium choice piece of steak meat and maybe a pea or a piece of carrot and then push his plate aside just in order to make room for a dessert as big as his head. He will sacrifice the finest in cuisine if there means there's sugar at the end of the rainbow for Kevin.
It's a balancing act.
It's not a balancing
act. You can't eat too much dinner because then you don't have room for the dessert.
You can eat protein and vegetables and things.
I do.
And then if you have any extra room, then maybe you have a little bit of dessert.
See, you're not a planner.
You don't forego the quality food in order to get to the mound of ice cream.
You don't know, man.
I do feel like it's a carryover from when Kevin must have been a kid where his mom said, you can't have dessert unless you eat everything on your plate.
Right.
I feel like this is his pushback now. I'm going to show you, Mom. I'm going to eat barely nothing on my plate.
F food, I'm going to have just sugar.
Exactly. Just dessert.
Well, they're calling it the granddaddy of all desserts at the Powder Room restaurant in Hollywood.
Okay.
It is a milkshake that also features high-end booze, Belgian chocolate, edible gold, and comes with a Swarovski Montana blue crystal ring attached. The entire dessert, $500.
Yeah!
I don't even know what that is.
For the Kevin special.
I don't know what any of that is.
We need to go and have one.
Yes,
I can eat
do.
Gold.
Why am I eating
it's
gold?
It's edible gold.
It's edible gold.
Oh, okay, great.
And then you get to poop gold. How cool is that?
Right.
How many times in your life have you wanted to poop gold?
You didn't mention that.
Well, that's one of the byproducts.
A hell of a benefit.
Sure Kevin. Is. Don't eat with your face.
Miley Cyrus is doing her best to show us that she's just a normal, regular girl. Or normal, regular llama. She says, I'm down to earth.
Right.
Told BBC One Radio, I am super lame. I never leave the house when I'm not traveling. I'm a complete hermit. Claims she's just a boring, regular girl.
Yeah.
And that's why she got up on that award show in Europe and lit up a joint and smoked it in front of everyone. Because she wants to prove to us that she's just a regular girl. She's not desperate for attention whatsoever.
That's correct.
Yeah. What are we going to do with her?
I like everything she's doing. I just wish she was hot.
Well, you wish that of every woman, don't you,
Kevin? I'm just saying I'm fine with all of her instincts. Taking off her clothes, all that stuff. Good, fine. But be hot.
I'm saying calm down.
All right.
Just a little bit. And Lindsay Lohan's been seen with Miley Cyrus recently. In Touch magazine's reporting that it's not as nefarious as you might think. It's not that Lindsay has fallen off the wagon, but it's because she wants to help Miley deal with her drug and partying problems and thinks maybe an early intervention will steer her away from a downward spiral like she suffered with her career and life. So maybe she's saying, look, you're having a good time now. Just watch yourself because sometimes things can get out of control.
All right.
And next thing you know, airtight! Things can happen. Matthew Perry is going to be showing up as a guest on the next season of Courtney Cox's show, Cougar Town.
Friends reunion! I'm tired of hearing about that.
Matthew will be the third friend to appear on the show. Lisa Kudrow and Jennifer Aniston already showed up in seasons 1 and 2.
Obviously.
No word on what role Matthew will be playing on the show, but it's practically a Friends reunion.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Let me ask you guys this. As much as we all enjoyed Friends at the time in the 90s, what would your level of interest be in an actual Friends reunion? Because I really wouldn't be that psyched about it.
Really zero.
I'd watch. I'd have to admit.
Would you?
If they did a TV movie or something, they got everybody together, I would absolutely watch. I have fond memories of those kids. I just hope Ross and Rachel have some romantic problems that they need to iron out.
Yeah, they never got to that, did they, in the show? Never worked on any of those issues.
No, they never really brought that point up. I think there's untapped potential there for drama.
Probably a lot.
If they would have relationship trouble. Movie news, Universal has announced their release date for 50 Shades of Grey. Hey, you know, why don't you find an actor to play the lead first before you start putting release dates out there?
They got one. They got their guy.
I know they do. Oh. But it seems like they got a lot of issues with that movie right now.
Sure.
When they're releasing it should be the least of their concerns. However, it's going to be 2015. We will see 50 Shades of Grey on Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day 2015.
Well, it is romantic.
It is, Lisa. It is a date movie for those who like to get tied up and hit with a strap.
Right.
It is crazy.
Legions of women.
Yes. 2015 is already starting to fill up because you had Star Wars coming out in 2015 as well recently, right?
And Batman and versus Superman. Sure. There's a lot of 2015 movies loading up.
I'm going to have to start booking 2016 soon.
How about Christmas Day 2015? You want to know what's coming out then?
Believe so, yes.
The next Mission Impossible movie. Wow. Paramount has decided to roll out the most recent Mission Impossible that once again will star Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt.
Please tell me Simon Pegg will be in this again.
The fifth Mission Impossible. No word on the rest of the cast.
Great in that last
one. No word on whether they'll be returning or not. But Ghost Protocol made a massive $700 million worldwide. That movie came out in 2011, so it will have been 4 years between Missions Impossible for Ethan Hunt. But he can get in his walker and change his face. He's bad grandpa now, right? Isn't he? Same guy.
Yeah.
Take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Joseph Simmons, Reverend Run of Run DMC, is 49 years old today. Actor Patrick Warburton, who plays, of course, Joe, the paraplegic policeman from Quahog, Rhode Island on Family Guy. You can also see him in Rules of Engagement. He was in Ted as well, 49 years old. Josh Duhamel is 41 years old. Travis Barker from Blink-182 is 38. Olga Kurylenko from Quantum of Solace and Magic City in talks, perhaps, to play Wonder Woman in the Batman vs. Superman movie, if that indeed is the character. Apparently they're casting for a dark, exotic, athletic woman, and everyone's jumping to the conclusion it's going to be Wonder Woman.
All right.
34 years old today. And our very own, he doesn't want to talk about it, Bean Baxter, celebrates his birthday today. Happy birthday, Bean. Enjoy those donuts and lottery tickets.
Whatever.
Nobody ever cared less about his own birthday, yet more about other people's than Bean Baxter.
It's not just cares less, it's disdain.
Yeah, does not want to have it. Doesn't know,
maybe he
doesn't
want angry about
maybe
it.
Maybe he doesn't want to exist. Maybe he rues the day he was born.
It could be.
I know I do. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning is an all-new Kevin DeBeach. Your cousin Sal will be here with his NFL picks.
How did he do last week? Do you remember? Did anyone find out? How did he do?
I'm not
still losing people money?
Positive.
I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is, though, yeah. We have more tickets for the Amazing Spider-Man 2 event that we've been giving away. We have the movie beat because it's Friday. We have a brand new internet roundup, and we have Adam Sessler talking about PlayStation 4. And we're going to start that auction for the ultimate K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas experience. We'll tell you about that first thing in the morning tomorrow.